Jan, are you here? Can you hear me? Testing.
I'm here, John.
All right, my board isn't working at all. All right, I guess we'll get started without a song tonight. It's 10 minutes after anyway, so let me push the recording back on. I think we're still on. Are we still recording? I guess we are. Yes, we're recording. All right, well, let's just get started. Okay, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 1st, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our participant code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is in Matthew 8. We just ended reading the Sermon on the Mount, which was chapter 5, 6, and 7. And we're going to pick up the following chapter, chapter 8. We're going to read verses 1 through 13. So Matthew, chapter 8, verses 1 through 13. When he, Jesus, was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, there came a leper, and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou can make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus saith unto him, See that thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion, beseeching him, and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said unto him, Lord, I am not worthy that thou should comest under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. And I don't know why that stopped, but anyway. Okay, all right, let me just pick up in verse 5 here. We're reading Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 through 13. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came a centurion beseeching him and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home, sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. And the centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and thy servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say unto this man, Go, and he goeth. And to another, Come, and he cometh. And to my servant, Do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled, and said unto them that followed, Truly I say unto you, I have not found so great a faith, no, not in Israel. And I say unto you that many shall come from the east and the west, and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into the outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus said unto the centurion, Go thy way, and as thou hast believed, so it shall be done unto thee. And his servant was healed in the self same hour. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 through 13. Okay, you know, we're getting ready to file a lot of papers in the court. It's going to take a couple of weeks to put all this paperwork together. Maybe next week we'll have something to read. We're responding to a letter that we received from some lawyer, actually the U.S. attorney, who is trying to protect the criminal. We've already done a default paper on. It's the clerk, trying to subvert or to con us for $400 in order to have justice done in our courts. And they have defaulted. And this U.S. attorney responded with a letter. They like to do this, you know, kind of just send a letter to the judge and their will be done or something. But anyway, we're responding to that letter now. We should probably have that done this week, and we'll read it next week. If anybody wants to read the actual letter that that the attorney has written, you can find it on our document page. Just go to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight grand jury, and click on docket. Or you can put in nationallibertyalliance.org/docket. And it is paper number 1017-03, U.S. Attorney Letter to Dismiss. Anyway, we have a lot to say about that. And since all these attorneys are having so much problems reading our paperwork and figuring out how common law works, we're writing a paper, which we're going to file to the courts, of course, and we're going to file to all the people that we've been serving papers on exactly how this court system is working, since they don't know how a Article III court is supposed to operate, and they don't know what common law is, and they don't know what the Constitution is and what the Bill of Rights is. We're going to explain it to them. Now, we've been filing a lot of memorandums, which explains a lot of different things. We gave them a memorandum on the Second Amendment. We gave them a memorandum on law. We gave them a memorandum on laws on standing. We gave a memorandum in support of our jurisdiction, a memorandum on jury tampering and stacking, memorandum on Article III courts, memorandum on the founding documents. We've given them a memorandum of facts, and a memorandum of grand jury authority. And I'm sure there's a few others that I missed here. We also gave them a statement of jurisdiction, and we also sent a very special letter to the governor. I'm looking for the name of that one. Not the governor, I mean the judge, the magistrate of the court, make sure he doesn't act as a judge. And that might have been inside of the jurisdiction paper, but I'm not sure. We'll find, because we're going to make reference to that. But a lot of these memorandums we've been writing is in order to build the case of what a common law case should be, and what the law, the real law, is concerning, you know, a common law court, and how it should proceed, and how we should get due process, and so on. So we're going to kind of put one paper together. I'm not sure what we would call it. I don't know that we would call it a memorandum per se, but maybe we will. I'll have to think that out a little bit, and we'll figure something up. But basically, to bring all these memorandums together and fit in the missing pieces that so that they can understand better on what the rules of a common law court is. And anything other than a common law court under the authority and jurisdiction of Article III is null and void, and we want to make that clear. We also, this is the perfect time to respond to a lot of the problems and go after not only, start going and pursuing indictments. Now, that may not turn up too quickly, but we're doing show causes first. I'm going to give them opportunity to speak, opportunity to respond. But this U.S. attorney up here in Albany, New York, I mean, we're getting ready now to put together a lot of our papers. As soon as we write these first two pages of papers, we're going to package everything up and send a copy to the Attorney General. And since the new Supreme Court Justice has been approved by Congress the past day or two, we'll send him a copy too. And we're going to talk about the subversion and the problems in the court, the fact that there is no Article III court, what their duty is. We're also going to go after Congress and talk to them about their responsibility and their duty concerning the problems in the court. And there's problems everywhere, but we're concerned right now about the problems in the court. If we could fix that problem, then we can fix all the other problems. So we need to go after Congress to press them for impeachment. They need to go after judges and start impeaching these judges. Now, I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they have the backbone to do it. I think I just don't think they have the backbone. But we're going to at least inform them that they need to be doing this, and we're going to start pointing out all of these judges that are involved in a conspiracy across this nation and in every single federal district court, it seems. At least every court that we get involved in, it's the same thing over and over again. No due process, tainted juries, no constitution in their courtroom. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And we're just sick and tired of it, and we need to bring it to an end. And I do believe, I listened to the speech that the president made. I was very impressed by his speech that he just made. I think it was yesterday he made this speech. It was 100th day in office, and he made a speech concerning what he's doing and where he's heading. And we did post that up on our website under the news. If anybody hasn't seen that speech, you definitely got to get up there to see it. I think it's under Trump in the news. Let me take a quick look. Okay, yeah, if you go to our website and you highlight news and then click on Trump in the news, you will find his speech, I believe. Waiting for it. Taking a long time to download everything. Yeah, President Trump's first 100 days. If you haven't heard this speech, you really need to go listen. I mean, this guy's going after him all. You know, there's a lot of things he hasn't done yet, but give him time. I mean, he's got his hands full. And there are a lot of things it seems like he's ignoring, but I think he's going to get to them little by little. He made a point that Common Core is done. Common Core is going to be done away with. He mentioned that at the end of his speech. And he mentioned numerous things. So I do believe this president does want to make America great again. I do believe he understands what we're doing. I've heard that such things from other sources about us, from him. You know, true or not, I don't know, but that's what we hear. And we have been copying him for quite some time, and we're going to copy him this final set of papers and make the point to this, Attorney General. He needs to send us down an honest, law-abiding U.S. Attorney General, because this one here that's in Albany is a fraud, and he is protecting, aiding and abetting a criminal. We're going after them for criminal charges. And instead of going after the clerk for fraud, and he decided to go after, the grand jury, we the people. And, of course, he makes the same error that many other people make, thinking that we are coming in as, really as the plaintiff. We're not coming in as the plaintiff. We're coming in as the sureties of peace. We're coming in on behalf of the people. You know, when the prosecutor comes into a court and they go after someone criminally, you know, they always have they have the people, versus whoever, and the prosecutor comes after these people over criminal things. Well, they've been using our name in vain. They've been using our name unrighteously and supporting things that are really, criminal and not justice. So here we are, the people finally coming in under our own name, we the people, on behalf of many people. You know, as we mentioned, been mentioning and talking about this for the past month or two, we have about 30 habeas corpuses that we need to go after judges and clerks and we're going to do show causes. We're going to give them an opportunity to respond. So we'll do a show cause, and then we'll move it into the criminal realm. We're going to lay out how this court case is going to go forward. Again, it's not the ordinary way that things should operate, but since they won't give us a hearing or a voice in any courtroom, we can't come in and bring all these criminal judges, because they're not going to do anything about it. Prosecutors won't hear. You can't get to any grand juries. They're all puppet grand juries anyway. They're led by the nose to do the will of the prosecutor, and the trial jury is led also by the nose to do the will of the judge and the prosecutor. There is no justice in these courts, and we're going to make that point very, very clear. We got quite a few potential papers coming up on non-judicial foreclosures. We have both tax non-judicial foreclosures, and we also have mortgage company non-judicial foreclosures. And this is a conspiracy because it's happening in the courts exactly the same way. There is a process, and they're all working on the same thing. All these judges that are rejecting and refusing due process, that's a conspiracy. They're all doing it the exact same thing, responding in the exact same way, removing the papers and just ignoring. That's a conspiracy. That proves conspiracy because they're consistently operating in the same way. It's called collusion. And they're subverting we the people. They're subverting the Constitution. They're subverting the United States of America. And we've got a lot of other court cases. Of course, we have the court cases out west. We've talked about that last week and the week before. We're going to bring those cases in. We're working on those now. There's a lot of evidence that we have accumulated, and we're going to start, hopefully, in the next week, uploading a lot of this. We already got a lot of evidence up there. People should be going up reading right now because there's a lot more coming up. And so there's a lot of reading to do. Go up and read now. Read what we have up there. Get ready for the oncoming of a lot more paperwork. But we have a lot of evidence coming. We're going to file charges. First, again, we're going to be doing things really going forward with show cause, and, of course, we're going to alert the Attorney General, President of the United States, and also the this new justice for the Supreme Court of how we're operating and what our plans are, that this is the criminal cases that we're bringing together. Since they won't allow them into the courts, we actually went and opened a case ourselves, got a number, and we're going to be doing indictments here. But first, we're going to give opportunity of all these people will have that opportunity, final opportunity to confess, repent, and turn from their ways and start doing the right thing. And if they don't do that within the time period that we give them, then we're going to move towards indictments. Again, we want to try to push the Congress to do their job and go forward after these people with impeachments. But again, I don't believe they're going to do it. And we're going to communicate while we're doing this paperwork. We're going to be communicating because we want to know exactly what is it that the Attorney General is going to do. Is he going to respond? Is he going to obey the law? Is he going to enforce the law? Is he going to stop all of this injustice in our courts? All of the subversion against the Constitution? Is he going to step up and do the right thing? And Mr. President, if he doesn't do this, what are you going to do about that? That's how we're going to kind of handle it. We're going to try to bring it together to force these people to do the right thing. And the President said, we're going to remind the President that he said that he wants a lawful government. He believes in the law. People need to be obeying the law. And that this guy here that he chose, this Attorney General, he's going to enforce the law. That's what he said. I mean, we got the tapes on that. This is what he said. We're going to remind him. Matter of fact, we may even refer exactly back to where it was that he did say those things. But we're going to remind him of what he said and require that he proceed the way that he says he's going to proceed. I'm tied up right now. You're going to have to come back. Right? You know, that's what we're going to be pushing, and that's what we're going to be doing. And it's going to take 2 or 3 weeks to get all this stuff together. Got a lot of writing to do, like I said, a lot of planning. And then very soon down the line, I would think within 30 days or so, roughly speaking, after we accomplish these goals of getting all this paperwork in, we're going to start moving towards indictment. But we really do want to try to set the stage up that we're going to get the agreements from the Attorney General and the acknowledgement from the President that he's going to do the right thing and push, and they're going to give us a prosecutor. We want them to give us a prosecutor. We want a U.S. attorney that's going to obey the law, and we will watch him like a hawk when any and all cases. And we're going to need more than one because we've got about 50 cases. You know, we have the murder of Lavoie Finnegan out west. We have all of these sufferings of all of the patriots out there that have been standing up for their rights, and they've been trampled upon, they've been abused, they've been put in jail, and there's really no real charges against any of these people. I mean, they're making everything up. And we're going to make these cases very, very clear. The evidence we have is just overwhelming. In every single case we have overwhelming evidence. No person in their right mind that has logic could look at this and deny it. Nobody. And it's not just one case. It's 50, 60 and more. I mean, I don't even know how many cases we have. We got a lot coming down the pike. And so we're going to press them through. But again, we've already put the judge on notice that don't even think that he's going to act as a judge. He's a magistrate. He doesn't get the summary judgment unless we order him to do so. Okay, we did recently order him for the default and to put that default out. He hasn't responded yet. Of course, the U.S. attorney responded with a letter. I think the judges, the magistrate has taken a little bit of leave or opportunity to wait to see what we're going to do with that letter. So we'll let him know. And we're also going to, let him know in that response to that letter, which we're not going to respond by letter. We're going to respond on a record. And we're going to bring that letter into the record. And this is the second letter we've gotten. We got the same thing from the Attorney General here in New York State. Again, there's no standing business. And, this lawyer, other lawyer talks about us not having the ability or the authority to be able to come into court to fight this case. They go on with all this silly stuff that has nothing to do with law, nothing to do with common law, nothing to do with Article III courts. If you're an injured party, you have standing, period. End of subject. There's nothing else to talk about. And especially if you have one of your unalienable rights, oppressed somewhere by lack of, they refuse to give you due process or whatever the case may be, that brings us right into any of the federal courts immediately because that's their jurisdiction. Okay, anyway, that's where we'll go. We're going to have a lot of papers to be revealing, like I say, in the next couple of weeks, and hopefully next week we'll start reading some of them and getting them into the courts. And lots of evidence. You'll start to see lots of evidence starting to appear up on our page soon. We've got lots of video evidence. We've got a lot of written evidence. We've got a lot of, affidavits. We've got lots of evidence against these judges. I mean, it's just unbelievable what these judges are doing and what they're saying and how they're treating we the people. And we're going to bring it to an end. And I do think that Trump is going to work with us on this. I think he has signaled us on this. And I do believe that he's going to force either the Attorney General to obey the law and enforce the law, or he's going to fire him. And that's what we're going to tell the president he needs to do. If this guy isn't going to enforce the law, we want to indict him too. He needs to be fired. We will impeach him by indicting him if that's what we have to do. But that's your job, Mr. President. You need to get rid of this guy if he's not going to obey the law, keep the law, and enforce the law. We don't need an attorney general that's not going to enforce the law. And we're tired of these attorney generals, whether they're on the U.S. end or level or whether they're in the state level. We're tired of these attorneys coming out representing the criminals, constantly representing the criminals against the people. They're supposed to be there to represent justice, to represent the law. And generally speaking, the people that are breaking the law in the courts are the judges and the clerks and the elected individuals themselves. They are the lawbreakers. And again, I think our paperwork makes this quite clear. President Trump, in his speech over the weekend, again, his 100-day speech, 100-day in office speech, made a big thing about the Second Amendment and what a big fan he is of the Second Amendment, and he's going to make sure that we the people have the right to carry our weapons, to hold arms, which is right on timing with our paper here in New York, which right now, I got to look, but I'll tell you what, it's very close that the governor's office is going to default on our papers. Gonna look at the dates. We'll know next week. We'll see what's up, where we're at with that. But that's going to be very interesting, and I'd like to see what the Attorney General is going to do with that one if the governor and the Congress here in New York defaults on our Second Amendment issue. Okay. Let's see what else we have here. Jan, do we have any questions?
We had a question, but it's on my computer and my power's out, so I can't get it off. I did have a question for Gerard, if he's here.
Okay, Gerard, are you here? Calling Mr. Gerard. Let me go out and see if I can see him.
I don't see Gerard.
Yeah, I don't see him either. Okay. All right, well, maybe we'll try to connect with him later on that question. All right, and you don't recall any of the other questions. I guess we could pick them up next week.
Right.
Okay, do we have anyone that's going to speak? Robert, are you going to be giving us some kind of an update or anybody? Okay.
Well, I don't have an update on what's happening out here, but I'd like to make an announcement to people anyway.
Sure. Right ahead.
Well, on our Thursday night Committee of Safety calls, we're only getting like 28 people in the room. That's not satisfactory. And I just want to say that if there's anybody on the call tonight that signed up to establish committees of safety, you know, you need to come into the Thursday night call at 9 p.m. Eastern time, same room as what we're in right now, and start learning and get an education on how to set up the committees of safety. You know, I can't even begin to tell you how important it is. I mean, it's probably the most important thing we could be doing right at the moment. And so if you've signed up to establish committees of safety in your area, your counties, then let's come on the call. Learn how to do it. Let us help you. We got to get it going. That's all I have right at the moment.
Okay, thank you, Robert. Is there anybody else, anybody else that has, well, I guess, Jan, you wouldn't know because you don't have a board up, so.
No, I don't.
Okay, all right, I guess that's it for that. All right, we're going to move over to Brent, pass things over to him. Brent is the author of The Excellence in the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent Winters, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Thank you. I'm here.
Okay. We got you.
Yes.
Go right ahead, Brent.
Okay. Well, appreciate it again. And as I like to say often, the only remedy for lawlessness is true law. There is no other option. Politics is not the answer. By the way, education isn't the answer. If it was, our university campuses and our school campuses would be decent places. They are not. That's not the answer. Well, the right education may be the answer. Wrong education is the problem, or no education at all. We're talking about the laws of nature, and the laws of nature's God. That phrase taken from our organic law, the record of our organic law, as it has been observed and written down on paper, particularly our Declaration of 76, that phrase lifted from the Scottish Enlightenment through John Locke, taken from John Locke, a fan of the Scottish Enlightenment. He was taken in by it, as was all of England, really, at that time. And John Locke wrote it down in his second treatise of government. He said a lot about those kind of things. And this fellow by the name of Tom Jefferson picked it up, and so it was in our Declaration of 76. The laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things and the laws of nature's God written in the Bible, as Blackstone puts it. We're talking about the laws of nature, that first volume that is unwritten, because our Declaration of 76 cites it as the foundation of law. And if you go to Blackstone's volumes on the laws of England. That's the name of them. But what it boils down to is the common law principles. He talks about the fundamentals of law, the sources of law. And as we were saying on the radio not long ago, Islam, by contrast, and all of the other false religions, there's only one false religion that comes under many labels, but it's always the same, Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, schisms and isms that we wish was wasms. All of them talk about the law. They talk about the standards. They talk about the way things ought to be. They talk about, as in Buddhism, philosophy. This is what it ought to be. The Greeks talked about the way things ought to be. The Hindis and the Hindus and the Sanskrit writings of India talk about the way things ought to be and what is right and what is wrong and how to approach life. But the laws of nature and the true religion, the true response back to God in obedience to his law, the only true lawgiver, doesn't focus primarily on what is to be done and what not is to be done. It focuses on the source of the law. As Jesus Christ said to Peter, he said, "Who do men say I am?" The question was first, not what do I do? The question first is the spring polluted? Is the source of the law clean? And what is the source of true law? It is the true lawgiver. Is his mind clean? Is his being clean? And so the focus of true religion, and Blackstone makes this point also, is who is the lawgiver? That's the first question. The laws of nature reveal the character of the lawgiver, as do the laws of nature's God written. But what is natural law? Rome and Babylon have always said, and I like to cite one of the cleanest, tightest thinkers that ever lived, and that was St. Tom, I shouldn't say saint, just Tom Aquinas. He's called St. Thomas Aquinas. I suppose he may have been a saint, but he's no more of a saint than any other Christian man, so I think it's inappropriate to denominate him that way. But Thomas Aquinas said that natural law, I want you to sum it all up, what it boiled down to is reason, it's logic. And he followed the Greeks, as did the man that introduced him to that, the Islamic sage by the name of Navarros, and the leading rabbi of Europe that day, Mohammedes. He followed the Islamic sage, Navarros. Islam has had that kind of had an effect upon us, but Navarros took his cue from the Greeks, from Plato and Aristotle, and that's how scholasticism came into Europe, was through Islam. And Islam, Romanism, and Judaism ever since have followed that line, that the nature, that natural law is revealed through logic. It is not. And the Bible's clear on that point. Natural law depends upon facts in nature. You learn things in nature. You plant in the spring, and you harvest in the fall. It's not much more complicated than that. And if you try to make logic of science, which many people do, and I've even read books on the subject, it's incredible. It's an important thing, logic, but it does not trump facts. And facts are the foundation of common law, not logic. Logic is the foundation of the law of the city that governs every country on the face of our planet, the code of Justinian, except a few common law countries. The natural law is so called because its discovery depends upon nature in two respects. One discovers nature's facts by digging and looking, and then by using one's natural ability to draw inferences from those facts dug from nature's mountain. And you come to conclusions. But the facts are what God stresses, the true lawgiver, in his two volumes, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. If I've mentioned this before, forgive me, I'll mention it again just as an example. Just as an example that facts are what God stresses. The man who wrote more of the New Testament than any other person was Luke. And Luke only wrote two books. He didn't write anything about theology. He didn't really venture any opinions at all in his Gospel of Luke or in his book of Acts. It's pure unadulterated fact. And to take doctrine out of those books is a little bit of a stretch. As a matter of fact, it's quite a bit of a stretch because that wasn't what he was trying to teach. He was trying to give people the facts. He says so at the beginning of his writings. And he stresses facts, and facts cover most of every one of the writings or the sections of the writings of God, including the writings of Moses. It is fact that must be the foundation for anything that arises out of those facts, not the other way around. And the law of the city is the other way around. Logic first, fact second. And as crazy as that sounds, that's the way they do it. William Blackstone, in his first volume, again, he says this is contrary to all sense, but that's the way they do it. And nobody would have known better than Blackstone because he was studied in the law of the city. Matter of fact, I'll drop a footnote here. It's fascinating. People talk about the commentaries of Blackstone on the common law, the laws of England. And the rest of the story is this. Those volumes were written out of lectures that he delivered to Oxford. And he was the first man to ever teach common law at Oxford University, because all the universities of Europe, as all of the universities of the world today, are products of Rome. And the law of the city is the center, and always has been, the Code of Justinian, when it started at Bologna, Italy, in the year 1053, the first university of the world. It revolved around the Code of Justinian, logic, not fact. Big difference. And Blackstone was studied in that, and he was funded by a wealthy Jewish man in England who had made a lot of money in business. And he funded Blackstone because he wanted him to teach on the law of the city, the civil law, because Blackstone was well-versed in it. He had been educated to it at Oxford himself, that big university over there in England. Well, he didn't believe that the law of the city was the right way to approach government, the civil law, and so he wanted to promote the common law, the law of England. And so what he did was he was funded to make these lectures, and he focused on our common law in order to contrast it with the law of the city so that it would look like he was teaching the law of the city, but in fact that's not what he was doing at all. But he had by hook or crook to get the job done, and he did. And the four volumes of the commentaries on the common law, the result of a man who wanted to promote with his money the law of the city, and Blackstone thwarted that effort in a very clever way. And his volume sold, by the way, in the American colonies of 3 million people, by far and away many more volumes here than were sold in England of that day, a country of 8 million people. Our interest as Americans was overwhelming. And as a matter of fact, I've compiled the exact figures of how many volumes were sold in the American colonies, and I even have a list, I mentioned that list, of some of the names of the men who ordered the volumes of the common law here in the Americas, and that's in the comparative law text, Common Excellence of the Common Law, that John mentioned a while ago. I have a section in there on Blackstone's commentaries, why they were delivered, how it came about, and things such as that. But the phrase natural law is not from the Bible. It's not found in the Bible just that way. It is sometimes used with reference to Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, as though these verses teach that everyone knows right from wrong. These verses, however, teach that instead, every person being of Adam's race, is endowed with the natural ability to discover and distinguish right from wrong. I'm going to repeat that. Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15 do not teach that every man, much less every Christian man, knows right from wrong by nature. He does not. But it does teach that every man, Christian or not, is endowed with the natural ability to discover and distinguish right from wrong. And if he doesn't do it, he's going to get himself in trouble. He is responsible to discover the difference between right and wrong. As John Locke put it, every man has the natural ability to feel out on the edges of what he understands and discover right from wrong. And he's been delegated the duty to do that and has the duty to do it, and he'd better well find out right from wrong. Our forebears, our first fathers, as some people have put it, as Americans, were the Puritans of first Virginia and then en masse in New England. The Pilgrims landed, of course. They were a sect of the Puritans, a very, very staunch sect, I should say. And then they flooded. The Puritan Party, it was a political party in England that had taken over Parliament, flooded into New England. And they understood clearly what it meant when the Bible says that in Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, what the Bible means when it says that men have the ability to discover right from wrong and therefore are responsible to do so. So they made it a law there that every school child, before he reached a certain age, I forget what it was, I remember reading the statute, but it was required that every one of them would know all of the crimes for which a man could be executed, all of the capital crimes, and know about them, what they were. Now that, friends, neighbors, and kin, is what we ought to be doing in the schools today. We ought to be telling children what are the capital crimes as God sees it through the lens of his eyes. What is it that abhors him most? And there are some things the Bible's unambiguous about. And at the top of the list, of course, is premeditated murder, killing of another person without justifiable cause, and, of course, sodomy, bestiality. Those are capital crimes, abhorrent. Another capital crime that's important in God's eyes now, according to what he believes about his creature man, is to fiddle around and change the standards of weights and measures. What is a capital crime? A capital crime is a crime in every country, among every people. The thing that those people believe will strike at the very foundation of their existence as a people. That's what a capital crime is among every people. But God says, here's what I tell you as your creator will destroy you as a people if you allow this to go on. And you can know that he thinks the things he thinks will destroy us as foundationally as a people are the things that he says men may be executed for. Of course, due process always applies in such cases. And that's more important than, or as important at least, as the crime itself to follow due process. And Jesus Christ makes that clear when he exposits the processes that are to be followed in cases of capital crime before a man or a woman is ever executed. And that was the problem with the leaders of Babylonian Judaism of his day, and I find that it's a problem in our own day. There are people that are executed, have been in America a lot for the past several decades, that did not get due process and were innocently executed. It was so bad in Illinois that this thing about railroading people to execution, not following due process, that the governor of the state about 20 years ago, time flies so fast, put a moratorium. He didn't do away with the death penalty, but he put a moratorium on it. He said, until we can make sure that innocent men aren't being killed, because it was discovered that innocent men were being executed, until we can make sure that doesn't happen, there's a moratorium on the death penalty. Well, because of that and other things that George Ryan did, he spent 5 years in federal prison, bucking the evil empire, getting in their way, saying that, look, if you're going to execute a man, lethal injection, electrocution, whatever method, if you're going to do that, all we ask is that you follow the modest inconvenience of giving him a real trial by jury and make sure that the government disgorges all the evidence it intends to use at trial, and don't let the government withhold evidence, and don't let the government manufacture evidence. That's a violation of due process. Well, natural law got off a little bit here. Something came to mind that I thought was important, but it is the ability to discover right from wrong, and that is a developed ability, by the way. It's a discipline that a person puts themselves to learn the standards of the true lawgiver to keep the standards of the true lawgiver, that means safeguard them from addition or subtraction, and then to do them. That takes discipline to apply them in the right way, in the way that they ought to be applied, because the facts change the application of the principle. The principle never changes. Thou shalt not murder. That never changes. But you know, there's lots of ways that a person can murder another fella and get away with it, make it look like it's not murder. That's the thing that is important, is to learn how the ability to know right from wrong in any given situation, to be able to recognize it when you see it. Because it's not always clear as crystal. The evil empire and the useful idiots of it are good at masking evil, making it look like it's good. If you don't believe it, just listen to the political discussions and the debates. Recall Donald Trump said at that one famous debate with the Clinton girl, Hillary, he laid bare the abuses of Bill Clinton of females, laid them absolutely bare, and said there are four of the girls he sexually abused sitting right here, and they were right in the front row there. And when he got done laying it all on the table, Hillary Clinton said, "Much of what he says is not right." She didn't say what he says is wrong. Much of what he says, I'm quoting her, is not right, but he gets to run his campaign any way he wants. That's the exact quote. But she was very careful not to say he was lying and not to say he was wrong, but just to say he was not right. In other words, he was not right in running his campaign that way and saying those kind of things. Is that lying, or did she tell the truth? Well, she told the truth as a matter of the technicality of vocabulary and grammar, but her purpose was to thwart people away from the truth. And she got the job done pretty much. As far as I know, nobody said anything about what she said, and I'm sure she had it practiced out. But to discern the difference between right and wrong, to have an eye for it, to have a mind that's honed to pick up on it so that you won't do wrong in any given situation, won't wrongly justify yourself in your actions, and that you'll notice when other people do that and act accordingly to protect yourself or get away from whatever you have to do. We're talking about government officials doing wrong things and justifying themselves. Or a while ago, John was talking about it. And when they make their arguments, it may seem like, wow, I never thought about it that way. Like the fellow that the bailiff in the back of the courtroom, he heard one lawyer make an argument, and he was listening to the proceedings, and the judge looked at the lawyer and he said, that makes sense. You're right. That's right. So the other lawyer made his argument, and when he got done, the bailiff was listening to all this. The judge looked at the other lawyer and said, "You know what?" And he said, "You're right, too." And the bailiff, in frustration, said aloud, "Judge, they can't both be right." And the judge looked at the bailiff and said, "Well, you know, now that I think about it, you're right, too. There are some people that just think everybody's right. And how do I know that? Because I've struggled with that before, and I hear arguments on both sides. When I was in school, I used to read the arguments on both sides, the opinions and the dissenting opinions, and if I just had them alone, I'd have to agree with them in a lot of cases on both sides. But there's still something wrong. What's wrong? Why is it that you can read a dissenting opinion and read the majority opinion and say, you know, both of those arguments are good? It's because, for whatever reason, any of us, and none of us are perfect at it, we haven't honed our ability to discern right from wrong in any given instance. And arguments sway us. But I tell you of a surety, I know for a fact that the true lawgiver who has given law, there's no gray area in his mind. He has always known what is right in every circumstance and every fact pattern. There never has been a time when he didn't know all that could be known. He can't learn anything. He's omniscient. That's the word that they use, omniscient. That means he's all-knowing and always has been throughout, from eternity past to eternity present and future. There is black and white. And it's our job, and that's why in our common law tradition, we don't say we make law. We don't say judges make law. We get mad. We say, oh, judges are trying to make law. Well, that is true in some instances. But it's also true that our common law tradition has given us the forms and the words that deny that. And we demand that judges say they make, watch this word, findings. Findings. Why? Because in our common law tradition, we have always believed, whether or not men believe it or not now, but the forms and the words we use reveal what we have always believed, and it is true that anciently, in our common law tradition, until very recently, men believed that right and wrong in any given fact circumstance has always existed because it's part of the mind of God, because he is the lawgiver, the great lawgiver that never makes mistakes and knows all. So it's not our job to manufacture right and wrong and say this is right and that's wrong. It is our job and the job of judges and the job of jurors to find the truth, find the truth in fact, and then find the truth in law. The Romans, by contrast, the Roman law, the canon law, the civil law, the code of Justinian, all of those, the foundation of those has always been, it's hidden in a lot of ways, it's hidden, but the foundation has always been that the voice of the people in the final instance is law. The voice of the people in the final instance is law. I'm quoting what we know of the 12 tables. The text has been lost, but people have quoted it in the ancient world, the 12 tables of the Roman law. But what they meant when they said that, don't be fooled. The voice of the people? No. What that means is the voice of the majority of the people had decided to raise a voice. You know, even the majority vote in America is not the people. It's only the people that wanted to vote. And the person who didn't vote is casting a non-vote, I like to say, and that's true too, casting a... He's saying something too, he's just not saying one way or the other, he's just saying, I don't care. Well, that's a vote, for crying out loud, let's don't think it isn't. But 51% of the people that decide to let their opinion be known is the law in all of the world. It's the law in Islam, and they hide it in several ways too, but when you look into it deeply, you find out it's just mob rule. And you find out that's true in the Roman civil law, and you find out that's true that has crept into our system in America. Oh, we have a political element in our common law government called the vote. But when people say, or when the civil law says, as and the Romans said this, the voice of the people is the voice of God, vox populi. That didn't mean all of the people. That just meant 51%. Could be more, but it was at least 51%. Well, when that happens, then, of course, 49% of the people or more, their God-delegated duties called rights are trampled upon. And we don't want that. That's why we have the Electoral College. That's why we have representative government that is a buffer between the majority vote. We have had other things in our common law country that help put a buffer between the raw majority. For example, the senators used to be elected by the state legislatures. And that was intended, of course, to do away with the idea of the raw majority, because that's not part of our common law tradition, the raw majority. It is part of the law of the city. And that's why, again, to stress what ought to be stressed over and over again, that's why in all of South America, that's why France is struggling like it is today. France and Bastiat, when he wrote the law, that famous book called The Law, he was frustrated because he knew the history of his people, the Franks, was a history of revolving war and civil war. And that revolving of civil war came to be called revolution. The revolving of it, it never stops. This bunch gets in power, and then this other bunch gets a bigger army and gets in power, and this other bunch then kills the emperor, and they get in power, and on and around in all of South America. They live like that year after year, perennially. Decade after decade. I know a fellow down in Argentina. Well, he's not there. Well, yeah, he's there. I know his daughter. She's not there. He's there. He got involved with a group of men that knew that the government was turning communist. And so they, by armed subversion, overthrew the government. That's the way it is in civil law countries. Overthrew it. And they established what was good. But because they are a civil law country, a law of the city country, a law of the Code of Justinian, and down there also by law, the canon law, which are about the same. Because of that, it wasn't long, just a few years, till another group came in and overthrew that group, and they're back where they started.
And his despair was communicated to me, and he was saying to himself in his older age, why did we do that? Why did men have to die? Why did some of our people have to die? Why did we end up killing some of them? For what? For what reason? That's the law of the city. Mob rule goes round and round and round. We in America want to avoid that. It's my passion to teach men and women and children, anybody that will listen, that we have something better here, something better than they have on the continent of Europe, but better than something that's in all of Western culture. Western culture is identified with Rome and Greece. That's not who we are. And the Romans and the Greeks weren't those who our founders quoted, and they weren't those whom, to whom they looked to establish our government. No, they looked to the common lawyers, like Edward Coke. They quoted him more than anyone. And the fundamentals of our common law government and all the wonderful ideals that come with it. And it's our job to constantly fight to reestablish them, because they are, as we speak, forever being supplanted by subversion, the devices of the law of the city, deceit, subversion, espionage, etc., that arose out of the Roman Empire. In recent times, it came out of Babylon, but the modern forms have come out of the Roman Empire. Well, our common law tradition lays claim for its juries, lays claim for them, for the juror, lays claim that they have the ability to find the law's application by inferring from evidence presented. We say that grab 12 men just happen to be standing around, and they get to decide if the defendant lives or dies in a murder case. And we lay it upon them to apply the standard. People say, and rightly say, that judge or jurors have the prerogative of being judges of the law as well as the facts. And that is true. And I think an argument that ought to be made even more than it is made is that in murder cases, they're given that duty. They're given the duty to decide whether the man accused of murder gets the death penalty or life in prison. That's quite a power. That's being judges of the law. That means, when you say judge of the law, that means you're the one that discerns how it applies and what should be the result of its application. And I say this, if we're going to do it in cases, in the ultimate case of capital cases of murder, we clearly, you remember that story, famous movie, if you haven't watched it, it's worth watching several times. The remake of the movie with George C. Scott wasn't bad. Pretty good. But the movie with, before that, with Henry Fonda and a lot of other famous people who were well known back in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, 12 Angry Men. It was about a jury trial in New York. And what they went through, they had to make the decision about all those things, the facts and the law. And that's what, if it's going to be good, if it's good for the murder case, it ought to be good for every other case that the jury clearly has the power over the facts and the law. But there is a massive move in America by every device you can imagine, the prosecutors and judges and courts and legislators and people in power, to thwart that effort right now as we speak. And it comes down to, by the way, in my opinion, one of the big things it comes down to is not really, people really don't understand what an oath is, how it differs from a vow, and whether or not an oath ought to be obeyed. When should an oath be obeyed, and when should it not be obeyed? There is a time, a responsibility, a lawful duty to not obey one's oath if one discovers that the oath that he took was to do something that was not lawful. And when it comes to juries, that means every juryman must make that decision for themselves. That's the power of our jury, is the power of individual judgment. Well, let me read what the Bible says about natural law. Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15 says this. This is Paul writing, Paul the Apostle, writing to the Christians in the city of Rome. He says this as a matter of argument. In that book that is, by the way, we're talking about facts, the book of Romans is a book of the tightest, most excellent logic. Paul says, for when the nations, having not the law, by nature from time to time do the things contained in the law, these, having not the law, are a law for themselves, proving that the law's imprint is written in their yearning, their conscience testifying with their desire. Also between one another, they have thoughts of legal accusations and legal defenses. I like that last phrase. Between one another, they have thoughts of legal accusations and legal defenses. I've argued with people that are quick. Boy, they're sharp. Get in serious, heated arguments with them, and they're sharp to defend themselves. They can do it clearly. What happens is their temper rises, and boy, when their temper rises, their mind works clearly. I don't do that so much. I'm not quick to defend myself, as some. Some are very good at it. It's an important ability if it's used properly. But Paul notices that in people, and he says the proof that people that don't have the law still apply what is right and wrong, what they believe is right and wrong. They are quick to make accusations and quick to defend themselves and defend others. God has put that in us to do that. And his point is here, in these verses, by the way, that's the winterized version of the Bible, Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. The reason he does that is to point out that not that men know right from wrong, but that men can discover it and do discover it, even people who don't have the law of God. They can do that. It becomes by nature. It may take a little longer. I mean, how fortunate are we? We have it in writing. We can go look at it and then go try to experience it. But Paul says every person has the ability to find out, and that is our duty as men and women to find out what it is God wants us to do. And Deuteronomy says, how do you do that? Deuteronomy chapter 4, learn, keep, and do what God tells you to do. Well, John, that's enough for tonight, probably. Thanks again for allowing me to come on and say a few words.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Let me go over to Q&A. Jan, Gerard's here now. Maybe you might want to ask that question.
Yes.
Jan?
Gerard, can you hear me, John?
I can hear you.
Okay. Gerard, at the 8 o'clock call tonight, the question came up about Trey Gowdy's two investigators that were reportedly murdered in Missouri, I believe it was, while attempting to serve a summons, and that his, on another video, his family had been threatened and they were in protective custody, and he was likewise put under a similar sort of thing. You said, I think, previously that you had investigated that and found that that was not true. Can you tell us what you found on that?
You have to unmute first. What number is he calling in on? Is it a 518 number?
I don't know. I don't have my panel up tonight, John.
Oh, okay. Hey, Gerard, when you can pipe in. I'm going to continue things until we can hear you. We can't get anything right now. So we'll go pick up the questions. If anybody has any questions or comments for myself or for Brent, star 6 to get into the Q&A, to the queue. Okay, we'll take our first person. And Gerard, pipe in when you can talk. Okay, Mark, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Thanks. It's Mary, and this question
Mary.
Is for Brett.
Hey.
Good evening.
How
this question
doing?
Is for Brett, if I may ask, if he's still here. Yes. No.
Yep, he's here.
Okay. You were speaking about the role of judges in a capital murder case. And I guess my question is, if indeed the original 13th Amendment has been authenticated, as I understand, and there anyone who accepted a bar card is actually a foreign agent because of the oath that they took, how can we justify giving that kind of power and control to a foreign agent?
You're talking about that you're saying the attorney is a foreign agent. Is that what you're driving at?
Correct. The judge, the attorneys, that's correct.
Well, most judges are attorneys. Now, not all federal judges in the past have been lawyers. I've known of such things because the Constitution doesn't require that a judge in the federal judgeship be a lawyer or be licensed or have gone to law school. I worked for a fellow once who had clerked for a federal judge in New Mexico, that not only was he not a lawyer, never been licensed, he never went to law school, never even went to college. He was appointed by Harry Truman. He served many years. And he said the fellow was really good, did a good job. But, well, this gives me an opportunity to correct an error. And I don't know how these errors get started about lawyers. And I understand that lawyers can be crooked as a dog's hind leg. I've seen all such things. Prosecutors seem to fall in that category of hiding, withholding, exonerating evidence, and judges have been sent to federal prison for taking bribes. All these, some have been impeached in our past, and maybe that's something that should be used again. That's a device our Constitution provides. But to say that a lawyer licensed to practice law in one of the states of our union is a foreign agent is a stretch beyond stretches. I don't know where that came from. To be
okay,
a foreign
well,
agent,
I'll
and the argument,
if you'd like.
Well, let me finish, then I'll let you go ahead
surely,
and explain
yourself.
To be a foreign agent, it seems like that the argument is that they've taken an oath to a foreign sovereign of some kind. I've heard that lawyers take oaths to the Queen of England or to the Pope of Rome and to some other sovereign, but mostly those are the ones that I hear about. And I can tell you flatly that's not true. Lawyers don't take any other oath unless they belong to a secret society outside of their bar license oath. And I'm sure some of them do belong to secret societies, everything from Masons to who knows what, skull and bones, all those kind of things. Or maybe some of them I don't even know about. Secret societies are part and parcel of the evil empire, and they're everywhere. Always have been. That comes out of Rome. And hiding information and hiding the Bible from people and saying only the priesthood can explain it. That's all Romanism to the hilt, the law of the city, Babylonianism, secret societies, all that, degrees of learning, etc. But I'm not aware of any lawyer, never met one, that's ever taken an oath to any foreign sovereign. I do know that they take an oath. Lawyers are required by the terms of the Constitution of the United States to take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And the reason they're required to take that oath, says our Constitution, is because they are officers of the court. And that's why they take that oath. But go ahead. What were you going to say, ma'am?
Thank you. Geez, back in March of 2013, I watched the New Hampshire State Legislature hearings. Five constituents had presented authenticated copies of the original 13th Amendment, along with supporting documents, to State Reps Stella Trembley, and the state legislature called hearings. She was the first to present to the state legislature the authenticated copies. Two had been found in Great Britain, one in the Law Library in D.C., the National Archives, and one, I believe, was in Georgetown, and one was in another university in this country. As a result of all of that, all of the original ratifying, and it was authenticated, it was validated that it was ratified. Apparently, that was part of the reason for the War of 1812, was to prevent it. But it was signed in and ratified in, I think, 1819.
What now? How do lawyers figure into that?
Subsequently, the documentation was then presented, as well as the testimony, that the BAR is actually an acronym for British Accredited Registry. And it is in our Constitution that any lawyer who pledges to a foreign country, and that is what their oath does, and accepts an emollient, is no longer considered a citizen. So, the explanation, of course, this certainly was not my opinion or interpretation. This was what was being explained during the hearings. And, of course, then I researched and found other sources. I believe all of the original ratifying states have since come forward. And, of course, this is all suppressed. They came forward and presented their authenticated ratified documents, that the original 13th Amendment was indeed ratified, and no person with the title of nobility may hold public office, along with accepting any emolument or royalty or anything else from a foreign government.
Yes, but that I can tell you from personal experience that I'm a lawyer and I'm licensed to practice in more than one jurisdiction, and I've never been reproached or asked to take any oath other than the one that the Constitution requires. And I've taken it on more than one occasion in different jurisdictions. I've never known any lawyer that's ever done that.
And which Constitution do you pledge to, if I may ask?
The Constitution of the United States, as the Constitution of the United States requires.
Well, the 1865 Constitution or the 1776?
The Constitution 1789
87 Constitution, excuse me.
The Constitution of the United States was accepted by the colonies of the United States after the Constitutional Convention. And I know you know the history. And that is the Constitution to which we swear, and it is the law of the land. And the law of the land, Article 6, is due process. It is our common law. And when we swear to uphold, to support, and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, I've taken that oath, by the way, 6 times in my life. Military service a few times, a prosecutor when I was in a small county, rural county once, for 30 days, I stood in for another fellow. I'm just giving you my personal testimony. I wasn't a lawyer. My father wasn't a lawyer. My grandfather couldn't even write his own name. But I'm a lawyer. I wanted to find out if some of these things were true. And I did. I found out what I could. All I can do is deliver to you what I know for sure from my personal experience. And I'm sure there are lawyers out there that are, as I said, crooked as a barrel of snakes. No, I said a dog's hind leg, about the same thing. And men are men. And some of them are very rotten. There's no question about that. And preachers and lawyers and judges and priests, none of them are excluded from the rottenness of mankind, the taint of sin. But this title of nobility thing, I can tell you for a fact, I've never known anybody that's a lawyer in the United States that has had a title of nobility.
Lawyer is considered a title of nobility.
Let me speak, please. Bar, B-A-R, refers to, from my understanding and my studied opinion, that rail in the courtroom. And when I go into a court where I'm not licensed, and I've done this with clients, walked into a court, in a federal court, where I wasn't licensed, the prosecutor stood up front, my client was down on the other side of the bar, and I stood behind the bar, and the prosecutor said, his lawyer is sitting right back here. And the judge said, where? And I held up my hand, and he said, you come up here in front of the bar and sit with your client. Because I wasn't allowed to come in front of that bar because I wasn't licensed in that federal jurisdiction in that state until the judge said I could. That's what a bar is. And there's a bar between those that are licensed to practice, to argue for other people, and those who are not. That's what I've discovered as a lawyer. And the thing about BAR and the British and all, maybe there's something to it, but I've never seen any sign of it in the courts. I'm, again, giving you my testimony as a personal experience. Go ahead. You're going to say something.
My understanding is that lawyer esquire is considered a title of nobility, and it had to do with the classes. And this was all done long before anyone that's alive today was alive.
Well, the title of nobility called esquire had some, everything in England, in Old England, even yet today, is in levels of nobility. There's no question. There was a gentleman, there was an esquire, that was kind of a farmer guy. But all of these things had, and esquires also were, they were under knights. They were armor bearers, so to speak. And then men had the duty given to them by heredity from their fathers to carry the shield or the sword of the king or one of the other members of the nobility in battle, and all these things were great honors that men had. And it's just like when I was a little boy, I used to get letters in the mail. And the letter, whoever wrote me the letter, usually a grown-up, would put my address on it, and they would say at the top, Master Brent Allen Winters. Master.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taught to do that in school, and I was taught to address people under a certain age as Master. And then I was taught to address married women as Mrs. And when I wrote letters, and I was taught how to write, we learned all those things in school. All of those titles are from the old world. And some of them were titles, not those especially, but they were still titles of a level that you obtained or that you had by heredity in society. We don't do that in America. That's not what America is all about. I understand what you're saying, and I see the importance of not having titles of nobility in America. But at the same time, the vestiges of our past have hung with us in words. I like to tell people we live in an awful pagan world if you just look at all of the names we have for the days of the week and the months. Those are rank pagan names, Friday, Tuesday, Monday,
mm-hmm.
Wednesday, all about worships of pagan deities, the sun, the moon, Tau, Frigg, Odin on Wednesday, etc., and then the names of the months follow too. But that doesn't mean that we here in America, and lawyers, let's talk about lawyers, let's try to narrow it down, that doesn't mean that lawyers have titles of nobility. I wish I could stop that crazy, ugly patriot mythology rumor. That's what I call it. There are serious battles to fight, but fighting that one, in my studied opinion and from my experience, is a water hole. It's not a hill you want to die on. There are hills to die on. That's not one of them, because it's a red herring of the evil empire. It's something that they put in front of our faces and dangle in front of our noses to get us, to thwart us from focusing on the kill. The kill. What do I mean when I say the kill? I mean the thing that really matters. As Justice Joseph Story said, strike but few blows, but strike them to the heart. All scattered fires but end in smoke and noise, the scorn of men, the idle play of boys. We must focus on the thing that will control all other things. And the thing, some of the things that will control all of the things, one of the things that John and Gerard and the others that are involved here, I've watched them, that they focus on are the courts. And I believe that they're right. That's the branch of government that must be focused upon. Forget the
legislature.
And it is
so corrupt. Excuse me. It is so corrupt.
Yes.
It is so evil. It is so corrupt. I'm going to drop a bombshell. I know for a fact, because I know the people who were in the agency that did it, I know for a fact the Bureau investigated the bankers, the banking fraud, the mortgage fraud, the foreclosure fraud that's been going on. They investigated and they determined through the investigation, this was the outcome of the investigation.
Uh-huh.
The bankers hired several companies to falsify the documents, fraudulently foreclose on people, form their own LLCs, take people into fraudulent sheriff sale, and then be their own collection company. Now, how do I know this is true?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is exactly what has been done to my husband and I for 4 years. The extortion of money is despicable, and every single lawyer, even the one we hired, has followed right along and played right along. What modification? We hired a lawyer to modify our mortgage. We never defaulted.
Mm-hmm.
This was J.P. Morgan absolutely playing us to the hilt.
Well,
and we, like
inside,
good little sheeple,
yeah,
did exactly what we were conditioned to do.
Yeah.
And this has all been a conditioning. It's a total mm-hmm. fraud. The banking system, the court system, the court system is under admiralty law, the law of the sea.
Now,
it is not constitutional law. There are two constitutions, a constitution of 1861 and the constitution of September 17, 1787.
Well, you're focusing.
That's not the one that we're. That's not the Constitution we're living under.
When you're talking about the banks.
That is the Constitution.
Well, let Brent respond here. But Mary, bear in mind. Look, we're all looking at the same Constitution for the United States of America. We've read parts of it. We're all reading the same parts of it. I know. Brent is looking at the same Constitution. I've heard this talk about the two or three other constitutions, and we have challenged people who claim they even have it, and I've never seen it. They never could produce it. But what you will find is maybe, early parts
of the John, come to Philadelphia, and I'll take you into Independence Hall, honey. I'll show you the real Constitution.
Well,
I've been there. I've seen it. I can't even read it. It's so dim and faded.
The
Constitution we read here and the Constitution we've taught from is not in error, is it? Are you finding errors in this? Are you saying this is the wrong Constitution that we've been studying and reading and that we put a course together on?
The 13th Amendment is not the slavery amendment.
Well, that's a different story. That's a different story.
No, that's when they negated.
No, I understand. That's a whole
that
different.
Was, that,
that's a
different
argument.
That's the Constitution
argument.
Of 1787.
Hold it. That's a
not the
argument.
Constitution of 1861.
Mary, that's a different argument. I agree with you on this 13th Amendment. I've seen the papers on it. I've seen all of the states talk and put forth the evidence. I'm trying to think of the guy's name who wrote the book. It's a 2-volume book. I've got that book. And that whole process, there is a problem with this 13th Amendment. So, but,
when there's fraud involved, John, it nullifies anything beyond.
But hold on. Well, looking at the Constitution as it was written and delivered to us in 1789, okay, and signed on. And then, of course, in 1791 or 2, I think it was 91, where the Bill of Rights was added on. And that's the Constitution we're talking about here. I presume some people are claiming that there is another Constitution, but I think it's an earlier draft because I know the one Constitution was delivered to me by an individual who's been teaching this stuff, claims that this Constitution was written in 1787. But that's early on. That was the Federalist Papers, and there was a lot of debate and argument that took place for the next 2 years. And so I think that was just an early draft. He did not produce a constitution claiming that this was the right constitution. He claimed that the 1787 was the correct constitution, but he couldn't produce anything signed. And most of what we read there was pretty much the same thing that was in 1789. We didn't get the whole constitution. But there's a lot of people talking about it, but I haven't seen it. But I do know that the Constitution that we talk about is the same Constitution that Brent's reading and many others. You know, we get the copy of this Constitution from the Constitutional Studies? Let's see, what is that? The National Center for Constitutional Studies. That's the one.
Correct, and they copied the book. They copied the little handbooks that we have in 2009. In 2013 is when the original 13th Amendment was validated. That's correct. That's what I'm saying. So after the Constitution, the Center for Constitutional Studies did their research, it was after that it was discovered that what's in that constitutional handbook is not correct. And the authenticated documents have been produced by every...
You're going to have to show us.
I'm telling you, just go to...
No.
John, Google New Hampshire State Legislature.
But the people who are making
Della the
argument... Listen, Mary, every person I've ever heard make this argument, I mean, maybe they got something there that I haven't seen, because I haven't seen. I keep asking everybody who's made this argument, give me the proof. Show me the opposite. Show me the
paragraph. I'm trying to tell you where the...
Why are you telling me where to get it? If you've studied this, give us a copy.
That's correct. You know what? It's at their website with their state legislature. Do it yourself.
Okay. All right, well, look, here's the problem.
I was left hanging,
I did what
I was advised to do, and I've been left hanging.
Mary, listen. look, we can debate and argue this and go on forever.
No,
but
I have no interest. Thank you.
But until you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, you got to show the proof of the other side. Anybody I've ever had this discussion with, they've always said the same thing. Go find for yourself, or go here, go there. I've gone to a lot of different places looking for a lot of, and I haven't found anything. I'm not saying that it's not there, but I haven't found it. And I can tell you, the only problem that I think I see with this book, the National Center for the Constitutional Studies, the only problem I see with the Constitution they put out is where they came in and they used Constitution of the United States of America when it's for the United States
of
America.
That's correct.
That's their only error. And as a matter of fact, some
people have written... And the 13th Amendment, John, listen, I did stuff, and I was totally ignored. So, no, I am not going to do it for
you.
You can go there. They wrote a bill. There are two bills sitting on their desk ever since the hearings of March of 2013. Stella Tremblay was then touted to be mentally unfit. And we're
going
to get her the help she needs. Everyone that's a whistleblower.
Mary, you keep going to the third. Stop. Listen, just wait a minute, please. You keep talking about the Constitution, and you keep going back to the 13th Amendment. I'm
correct,
talking
because
about... Correct,
because when there's fraud, John, it negates everything that follows, hon.
I understand
it nullifies
that there's a problem with the 13th Amendment.
From 14 on, is...
There's a problem with the 17th Amendment. There's a problem with the 16th Amendment. I'm
correct,
very much
from
aware
14
of that.
On...
We're not talking about that. Let's stop for a minute here. The Constitution is made up of the Constitution as we see it in this booklet and the Ten Amendments. Ultimately, that is the Constitution. Now, there is some amendments that are made after that, and there's a lot of questionable things about those things. But as far as the first Ten Amendments, which is part and parcel of the Constitution, it was agreed when they signed that there would be a Bill of Rights added to it. Okay, and they already were making a debate. That's ultimately, well, my opinion, was really what the anti-federalist papers were all about. And they seemed to create the fix by adding the Bill of Rights. Because when you take the Bill of Rights, which is a bill that is saying you can't do this or you can't do that, ultimately that lays out the main unalienable rights that we have, and there's a lot more than 10, of course. But there are the main structure of the Bill of Rights lays out the basic unalienable rights that we have. And anything is written or interpreted in the Constitution, whether it be the United States Constitution, whether it be any state constitution, or any legislation created by any of the legislators, whether it be state or federal, anything that would be repugnant to the Bill of Rights is null and void. And that has become such a powerful, in my opinion, is the most powerful part of the Constitution, is the Bill of Rights, because it's a bill of prohibitions. And you can't make any laws that's going to affect the unalienable rights of we the people, or anything that seems to be repugnant in any way is null and void. Now, of course, men haven't used their logic in this. I mean, we have all these things. Let's take the Second Amendment, for instance. You know, you have to go and get a license or to carry or a license to do this or whatever. You know, that really is repugnant to the Second Amendment. It's repugnant to the Constitution. How that has gotten by we the people and continues to get by we the people, you know, I have no idea. We must be that dumb.
Honestly, John, I'm going to tell you how. It's really simple. There has been a conditioning going on for over a century, John. The conditioners were conditioned. I can give you just a classic example in a nutshell. When I studied anatomy and physiology to assist surgery, I had the same professor for both classes. He brought a model in of the brain, of the head, because we were going to discuss the pineal gland. Now, this was an educated man who really believed, because that's what he was taught. And he told us what the pineal gland was. It's a little pine cone-shaped gland that's tucked under the hypothalamus, and he showed us. And he said, we don't know what it does. We do not know what its function is. Because, as you can see, we can't get to it when a person's alive. And, of course, when they die, we can get to it, but then we don't know what it does. And that was a bold-faced lie. He absolutely believed this. But the pineal gland is tied into your endocrine system. It's your third eye. It's your higher consciousness level. They have fluoridated us and calcified it. They have dumbed down humanity so horribly. There is so much history. And it isn't just in the Constitution. And it is all tied in. Everything is connected. So you can't possibly just look at one aspect and ignore the rest of it. Once you know your pineal gland's been calcified, you need to find out how to decalcify it and activate it. You're not going to believe what you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, well, anyway,
this is what has gone on, John. That's what's happened is that everyone has been totally conditioned to do as they do,
to believe as they believe,
whether it's right or wrong.
Mary, we agree with that.
Well, you were saying you didn't know how we got to this state.
Hold on. I agree. You know, you go to, they send you to school and they do teach you a lot of lies. The truth changes little by little. You know, what is truth today is not necessarily true tomorrow. And they go on and on and on and they change things. You know, you tell a lie X amount of time and no matter what you know the truth is, all of a sudden you start to believe the lie. I have seen this with people who were my elders who have turned their way of thinking as time went on. They became more and more liberal, and these people were originally conservative individuals, and they've lost their conservatism because over the years, it gets beaten at their door. Now, I understand that, but when it comes down to the people that really make the arguments, that get together and they make the arguments and really dig for the truth, to find out the truth, how it gets by those people and continues to become part of what isn't law, they claim is law, and it isn't law, or it is abhorrent law. It is repugnant to the true law. You know, again, it doesn't even make sense. Look at the clean words as it stands, and if you're going to look to see, well, let me see what it really says for myself. Because that's where you really got to come. I've heard a lot of people talk about the Bible, and until I went to see what it said for myself, I really never knew what the Bible really had to say. And it's the same thing with law. Until I went to see for myself, I never really knew. And when a person gets to that point to go to look to see for themselves, and they look at the words to try to understand what is going on and try to harmonize it with everything else that they're learning in that same area, whether it be the law, as we understand it through the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and what an unalienable right is and so on and so forth, or, you know, things of that nature, or something in the Bible, whether it be prophecy or whether it be, you know, God's law, you know. And what is a statute? What is the difference between the statute? And what is the difference between the statute and law? Okay, again, when you go to look for these things yourself and then you go make your argument and you build your case, you can't deny it. We write a lot of papers, and you can't deny what we write. You know, we're not formally educated or anything, but we've looked in to see what are the meaning of these words. What is the truth here? What is the law? And the law is quite clear in the Constitution. You know, ultimately, it all rests right back to the Bill of Rights, because the entire Constitution is read in light of that Bill of Rights, okay? And no statute can be written. The statute is written by legislators. Laws are written by God, okay? And laws are written by men also, because we wrote laws, which is the Constitution, which is the law of the land, okay? But, of course, that's the law that controls our government, that we, the people, initiated. But we never gave the power of government to write statutes that turn into law that control us. And that's pretty clearly, you could show that, lay that argument out pretty clearly and pretty logically, and it's undeniable. But, of course, the people who are in power, this takes away their power. It takes away their authority. It takes away their game, whatever it is they're doing, their fraud that they're playing upon the people, whatever they're in for, the money, the power, and it's all about power anyway, whether it's money or power, it's both power. But nevertheless, you know, they'll ignore it or not see it. And I see people's conscious, that their minds are so, I don't know, seared, I guess is a word, that they can't get past a certain point in logic. And it's very strange because to the common person who wasn't educated by a bar school, let's say, can see things much more clearly than a person that was educated in a bar school. They seem to ignore the Constitution. My brother went to to law school, taught through the bar, I guess. And when he came, he never finished, but he came out and he said, they never taught me anything. They talked about the Constitution, but they never talked of the Constitution. They would talk about it, and they would always push it away. They never really got to the point of dealing with constitutional issues. Of course, you got to be a constitutional lawyer or something. It was the claim or the idea, I guess, it's behind some of these people. But the bottom line, ultimately, is we are not taught the truth in school. We're not taught the truth in medicine, pharmaceuticals. I mean, it just goes on and on and on to just about all these subjects you can think of. But as far as the Constitution is concerned, this Constitution, the only error that I've come upon that I see in this particular booklet, and again, I'm not talking about anything after the 10 Amendments because I know there are problems with the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment, and so on, and the 13th Amendment, and others. But nevertheless, the rest of the body of this book, the only mistake I see is the word of instead of for. That's the only mistake.
Okay.
Now, the one in Washington, does that say of or for?
Of.
Okay, well, there's the error.
Listen, there are three sovereign states, Washington, D.C., Rome, the Vatican, and the City of London. Together, the three of them form a pyramid, a triangle. The City of London, for centuries, since the institution by the Rothschilds, has been controlling the financial politics of the world.
Yeah, we'll
the United States has been the military arm, and the Vatican has been the spiritual arm. However,
there are
13 families that literally rule the world. And it isn't the Rothschilds and the Bushes and the Rockefellers. I have the list of them. Everything goes through the Vatican Bank, which is a separate entity from the Vatican. And it's all very evil. And, yes, I was raised diehard Catholic. And I started questioning back.
Look, I personally can't confirm or deny that. I don't know many people that are here.
Well, I do. I'm trying to tell you something.
Okay, but the point is now, that's some deep stuff that you really need. If you're going to talk about things like that, we need to start bringing in, the facts that back that kind of thinking up. Look, we do know that there's an oligarchy behind our government. We know that these very, very rich people that control, again, you're looking at the military power, and you're looking at the religious power, and you're looking at the monetary power. Those are the three points of power. And we do know that there are people controlling those. We think we could name names. Maybe we can. Maybe we can't.
JFK was assassinated. This is the reason Ronald Reagan had a shot taken at him. They were bringing back the federal tax. They were stopping this.
We understand that. And look, we know that, let's take Obama, for instance. He was totally controlled by an oligarchy behind the scenes. But you know what? They haven't shown their face to this guy in office right now. He seems to be taking the whole system down. Well,
yes, they have.
I don't know.
That's what I said. You know what I do?
Okay, listen, Mary.
And I'm not
going to
get into all this. I don't want to get into all this. That's not what this
guy
is.
This guy is doing things that people would have been killed for. Okay, and I think they just let it go too far, and they don't know what to do with this guy. And I think they're afraid to take him out. Let's hope they're afraid to take him out. But whatever things are changing, there's no doubt about it. We know that there are people behind the scenes controlling all these things. We think we could name some of them. Maybe we can. Maybe we can't. We know about the Rothschilds, the Morgans, and the Warburgs, and so on.
Okay, if you'd like, I will provide you with a list of names, the graph of the whole hierarchy.
Providing providing the list doesn't solve the problem, nor does it prove the fact. Okay, you have to bring the evidence across with it. And hopefully someday when we can get our court system back, because fighting that battle at this point is something that's kind of worthless because we don't really know the facts. But I think once you take down the problems that are obvious, you deal with the judges, you deal with all of these people in the courts that are a problem, that are anti-constitutionalists, you deal with these people that are in government that are really, you know, controlled by these forces, and you get rid of all these people, forcing them under fear of indictment, okay, to do the right thing, to obey the law, and to do their job, what they were originally elected or appointed for. Once you get to that point and you get that fixed, now you can start to see where the truth of these things are, who these people really are. Because I think there's a lot of people who have explored a lot of things and have gathered a lot of evidence, but there's so much noise out there. There's so many voices. There's so many people saying this and some people saying that. They're so contradictive. You know, when we first started National Liberty Alliance, that was a major problem we had because we were learning from other websites and we were taking their conclusions and different things that they were coming up with. And then we found out that this wasn't true. And then we realized we had to relook at everything. So now, you know, whatever we really get involved with, we try to get right down to the nuts and bolts. And we try to keep it simple because it is really simple. It's all about due process and jurisdiction and your unalienable rights. It doesn't get any more difficult than those three real great points, okay?
Okay, tell you, John, I know that you guys are doing what you know is honorable. As much as you're all doing, understand you're in a different card game. They are not recognizing the real Constitution. They really don't. They are renegade. They are renegade to any laws that are going on. Listen, we were supposed to be added to a class action lawsuit. We sat in a debtor's hearing. It's on tape. Hold on.
I understand that.
The documents were submitted twice. There is so much fraud that is going on. We were not added to the class action lawsuit. When our attorney was asked about it, he said, "What class action lawsuit? I don't know anything about a class action lawsuit." That was 10 weeks after I received a call from him asking me for a timeline, and I told him that's what those five pages were.
Well, look, let's look at the facts.
They're extorting monthly.
But listen, let's look at some basic facts. These people are empowered and can get away with what they're getting away with is because they have filled the whole system up with minions, okay?
Yes.
Now, if you can take down the minions, and that's what we're heading for, to take down the minions, okay, and get the fear of the people through the judiciary, through the judicial process, especially on the federal level, and it'll go right down into the state levels. Once you can get that going, all these minions can be taken out, and all of a sudden they'll have the fear of going forward. They'll have the fear that they got to go forward. They'll probably leave or just abandon their office or their post or whatever, because, of course, they're being bribed on the other side of things. And who knows what they got on some of these people with all the problems that are going on with pedophilia particularly. I mean, who knows what's going on with all these people, what they got on them. But the point is,
videotapes, John.
Once you can control, once you could take out the minions, okay, and the minions are found, the key place is the judiciary right here. Whoever controls the law controls the nation. Either God controls the law, he's the law of the land, you know, he's the king of the court, and law of the land, the Constitution, and we're back under a common law process and a common law procedures. Okay, once you get to that point, okay, now you can clean everything else up. I mean, it really is a no-brainer when you think about it. But all of the arguments, you keep it real simple. It goes right back to just a couple of basic things, okay? It gets back to due process. It gets back to jurisdiction. And it gets back to your unalienable rights. Those are the three major things. And you could take them all out with those three issues. Every case we go after, it's always the same three issues, okay? And they can't win on paper. They can't respond. I think we have the right people in the right place. And, of course, God has to, it's got to be the will of God ultimately to make this work, because if God wants to bring judgment to the nation before he brings judgment to the world, then guess what? He could bring it any way he wants, and he may very well bring it by bringing back justice into the courts that were originally set up in America, or was intended to be set up in America, with God being the king of the court, nature's God. Okay, that's the law we live under. Okay, so it can be done from there. But once they lose their minions, now they'll be exposed, and there'll be a lot of evidence, and then we can find out the real truth, who these people really are. And I'm sure we're right on a couple of names here and a couple of names there. We may be right on a lot of the names. But we really don't know, because we really don't have all of that facts. We have stories. We have pieces. We have a little bit here and a little bit there. We don't know. But we will get there eventually, and we don't even have to drive that vehicle there. Because once we bring back justice into the courts, that'll drive itself. A demand to deal with those problems will eventually come to play. So they'll come by naturally anyway, and then they'll be dealt with. But anyway, I think we should move on. I think we've
okay,
really...
Okay, well, right now I know that money is controlling everything. And it's not even legitimate tender, but for argument's sake, it's controlling everything.
Yeah, I agree with
I
you.
I have my husband.
To controlling things. But bear in mind, if you don't control the courts, you can have all the money in the world, you still can't control.
That's what I'm talking about right now, the courts.
Yeah, you
I have my
the...
husband's. I have my husband's straw man account or birth trust account, whatever you want to call it, when they incorporated him. I can put his Social Security number in at the SEC, and I pull up the Fidelity Fund worth $3.04 billion. But a funny thing happened last week. We got our utility bill, and it's in the, both of our names says the property's deeded to us, but they sent a second bill in the name of Mark Bonich, no S, a second account that they've opened. This is what is going on, and they don't care.
Well, look at
every township, every borough, every county, every city has a second set of books. They're called CAFRs, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. The only way you get them is through the Freedom of Information Act, unless somebody happens to be involved with their community and ends up with access to it. I've addressed this the other day with the tax office, and she absolutely acknowledged it, but she doesn't
know who can. Well, we're somewhat familiar with that, but it's a very complicated system. You know, I've seen a lot of the different reports concerning the CAFR accounts, and again, it's a very complicated thing. I think in order to get to that, we have to deal with basically bringing justice into the courts. If the word justice is actually applied in our courts, if judges come to the point that they apply justice and they stop tainting the juries, the grand juries and the trial juries, which is what we're trying to really bring back into the courts, untainted juries. Once you get to that, the other stuff will start to open up, and we'll start to see it in people. But there is some complicated stuff here. Obviously, all this stuff is a play with money and how they're hiding money and putting money here and putting
correct.
Money there.
Correct, and they all get, and they all pay
themselves. Their pocket, the other person's pocket. Yeah, it's a game. And a lot of it has to do, I believe, with their retirement funds and things of that nature.
They all got paid out of my husband's birth trust account.
Yeah, again,
not only,
we're familiar
not only
with
did,
that. But the argument or the we really need to keep it more simpler than that, because there are so many different issues of that level that you're talking about that we don't have all the facts on. It's very
John, what I do have facts on is that out of pocket, for the last just over the last 2.25 years, over $60,000 out of pocket. Do you understand? Yeah. I know what I'm talking about. The extortion there's no court order. They are not following laws. They did not put us up on sheriff's sale. They put us up on foreclosure, private sale.
All the courts are operating that way. It doesn't matter.
It isn't just the courts, John. I'm trying to tell you that it is not just the courts. It's the entire legal system. It's the deputies. It's the sheriff. Now, it may not be where you live, but that's what it is here. and they laugh at any attempt.
Again, I think a lot of it gets to ignorance. You get a lot of ignorant people that just think this is the way it goes and this is what they do. They've never been taught what their job really is. I mean, how many sheriffs really know what a sheriff's job is really all about? How many sheriffs really know the Constitution at all? How many sheriffs have even read the Constitution? It gets back to ignorance. And again, it all gets back to the judicial process. If you get justice in the courts and you clean it up on the simple parts of it, you're dealing with jurisdiction, dealing with due process, and dealing with the people's unalienable rights, those three points. At some point, you'll get to the more deeper things, which become very complicated but can be dealt with, and the facts could be brought to the surface. It could be seen and judged by the people. But to get lost on those cases and those arguments and to try to go after those problems right now,
it's impossible.
It's just not
going to
go anywhere. Yeah, you can't. You got to fix the foundation first. You got to shore up the foundation and repair that first. But getting back into the courts of making this stuff up, almost every court we have been into since we started this thing, we see, in this case it moves this way, but in that case it moves that way. I mean, they don't even follow their own rules, and they do
make up on everything.
They just make it up and move on as if, and they make believe that no, they don't see it. So you begin to scratch your head. Did I really see it? Because that's where they're really bringing us to. And if people get very frustrated and you can't figure this out, and you can't figure the system out, but it's very simple, really. It really gets very simple. We're in jurisdictions unknown. There's nothing else to talk about. You look at jurisdiction, and again, you look at due process, and you look at unalienable rights, and that's where your battle is. And if you stick right there all the time, you can take down them in an argument, logically speaking, and you can lay it out on a paper. They can't defend against it, ever. And they don't, doesn't matter. They don't even try. They just try to say, oh, you don't have standing. They write letters to the judge, like they're doing right now with us, that we don't have standing, or we're not lawyers, we shouldn't be in the court, and so on and so forth. And again, we're going to explain to them exactly what we're doing in our next paper. And we're going to go forward with this thing, and I don't think there's a darn thing they're going to be able to do about it. Now, I may be wrong, but I don't think so.
Well, I know
because
that when we...
How are they going to be able to throw... 50, 60 cases out in one shot? I mean, and the proof that we have of collusion, the proof that we have a conspiracy across this entire nation in almost every federal district, and as a matter of fact, I think I could say in every federal district, because we have filed papers in every federal district, so we have sent papers in, and then we've gone to look to see that they've all been removed. We've already done that in 92, I think, of the 94 district court. But again, some of this stuff is complicated, but I think we should move on, see who else is other people in the queue.
Can I leave you with this, if I may? And because I'm probably going to end up being hauled out. I don't go out and seek some of this stuff, but I ended up with a family because I took in the son so he could get registered for school. Last year, they would not give the husband and wife a lease. And as a result, in a matter of weeks, what unfolded blew my mind. The illegals that were brought in were being housed in foreclosed homes. They were unskilled and put to work in my husband's territory, okay? Unskilled laborers framing these luxury townhouses and sustainable living townhouses. The work was so shabby. I ended up doing a couple runs onto the job sites. There were about 15 of them going up very rapidly to find out that the house was a drug house. I was called over to identify, do I know what this is? Yeah, they were syringes, along with a car that apparently had been involved in something because they black-coated it and hid it in the garage. The police came, and when they found out who owned the house, they wigged and left. Because my congressman owned the house. He also owns the properties. These people were being paid under the table. housed.
Well, we know
how are you
about
going to fight the, how are you going to fight this when it's at the very top of the corrupt federal government?
Again, you're not going to win those battles at this point in time, and that's not
that's
where
correct,
the
and they're all backed by this.
We need
all
to go
the
after
are backed
the judges.
By this.
Yeah, but once we go after the judges and the judges start to fear the people and they finally see the people coming, and again, you know, it's got to be the will of God that really makes this work, because certainly we have this is a huge, huge problem, and it's a big, big battle, and only God can really win this battle, in my opinion.
That is correct.
But the thing is once you clean up and shore up the foundation, get justice back into the system, everything's going to fix itself, and all of these terrible things that these people are doing are all going to come to the surface, and they're going to be known. And people are going to go to jail. People are going to flee the country. People are going to hide under rocks. And some of them may beat it, get away with it, but that's okay.
Yes,
at
John,
the end
and that
of the day,
is why they're resisting.
Still serves.
Right. John, that's why they're resisting the way they are and ignoring what's right and the law of the land.
Yeah, and we're going to see what happens. But right now, let's move on.
Okay, thank you very much. I apologize for monopolizing.
Right.
Thank
Don't
you
let
very
it happen
much.
Again.
Take me out back and shoot me.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what? If I'm still here, I'm telling you, they're going to take me away. Or take me out.
Gerard,
I'm not sure which.
Okay,
hey,
Mary, thanks. Gerard, you got
I'm
the
here.
Controls here?
Yeah, I got one
right.
thing to say.
Hit the
one
next
thing
button.
Is, yeah. Look, what you're never going to change is what it says in the Bible, that our fight is against powers and principalities. That devil
right.
was even in the Garden of Eden. He's always going to be here. He always
his
has
finger
been here.
He's the prince of power.
And like Brent says, men are generally evil, and if you give them enough time, they're going to take the money. And so right now, as the calcium
Lots
falls away from all of our
wicked. Who could know?
Pineal glands, and the calcium falls away, and people wake up. Now they're forced to toe the line because too many people know. When a critical mass knows, then they cover themselves up and they do the right thing for a time. And that's all you can hope for, is that we get enough people to put the light on them so that they close their pineal glands back up or whatever, and they go into hiding. You're never going to get rid of them. Until it's the end, until it's under God's rule. But as long as man's here running things, those fingers are – that power, that principality
that's right.
always going to be doing this. And so
Agreed.
That's the battle.
Saints will be destroyed and by the brightness of the Lord's coming. So and
go.
That
so,
makes the point that he's going to be here until the Lord comes. So,
that's
but
right.
But things can change around and justice could be applied. And you know what? It very well may be that God will judge the nations through the courts.
I think they are changing. I think that
yeah.
they've gotten to the point that they're eating their own tail and people are fed up. And look, if they don't change, they're going to self-destruct. That's where this is going. So that's my opinion anyway. But
All right, well, you got the...
Okay, I already unmuted the next caller. There's no name. 4159, give us your name and your and where you're from.
4129.
Or 4129. I guess I need my glasses.
Okay, you want to try these?
Go ahead. You've been unmuted there, whoever you are.
913. Area code. We probably put him to sleep.
Probably. Let me mute him and unmute him again. Sometimes that works.
Wake him up.
I don't know. Go ahead. You're unmuted. Phone them not ending in 4129. No, I guess they must have went for a quick...
Hit the next question.
Next. Okay. We got California Jeremiah. Did we put you to sleep, too?
You hear me?
I can now. I just heard you unmute.
Well, that's good. And it's nice to hear you guys on the call. And nice to, again, hear people learning about stuff. I guess I want to read something. I found a piece of case law while you guys were talking regarding grand juries and regarding the authority that they have to inform and report. But the specifics about this case from Santa Barbara, People versus Santa Barbara, was that when it came to reporting on local issues, there was no restriction on the authority. So in other words, the case law states basically that the grand jury is not necessarily a freewheeling entity. It's a part of the judicial branch, but it's constitutional, but it's not completely freewheeling per se, except in situations where the issues are about local again. Let me just quickly read the case law to you, because it's just better if I do that. A grand jury is not a completely freewheeling entity separate and distinct from the judicial branch. The grand jury serves as an integral part of the court system, subject to the court's general supervision. However, the grand jury enjoys full independence when investigating and reporting on activities of local government. So, People versus Superior Court of Santa Barbara County, 1975. Now, when I read that, I instantly thought...
Just so you know, that's an opinion and null and void in the mind of common law. Because the people...
I can accept you. Yeah,
because the people are not to be controlled by a judge or anybody in the judiciary. The people, we the people control them, okay? Mm-hmm. Anytime there is any kind of a control over the people when it comes to the grand jury or the trial jury, it's a problem, okay? If someone is trying to fix the jury, someone is trying to taint the jury, because we get to nullify,
those
laws or don't like those laws. We get to investigate mm-hmm. anyone we want. Nobody's supposed to be above the law. And how do you get someone to a point where you get them into a criminal court system is when a grand jury indicts. And if you can't go and look into the doings of the people at the highest level, then obviously they're above the law, aren't they? And nobody is above the law. So that's
right.
Whole thing is null and void anyway.
Well, John, I think it's actually good news. I think it's actually good news for grand juries on the local level, right? So, like, if you have your 12 peers, your 12 men or women or whatever, you know, at the local level, and you're having an issue, this case law is actually confirming their autonomy and, you know, their authority. So that's good.
Once you allow order into the system, mm-hmm. now you have a problem, because what you're doing, you're saying, well, let's use it. We can use it on this level. But you see, there's brick and mortar in there it's not stone. It's not a nice, tight fit. It becomes a problem later on.
Right.
So you shouldn't take on
anything
that's going to be a temporary help to use it as a foundation that's going to have to be replaced again later.
Might
as well stay as pure as we can, is my point.
I got you, and I'm hearing you. My argument is just that all of the issues that come up will be of a local character. So here's my question for you, okay? You have National Liberty Alliance, which is a national organization, and you have probably some international outreach that you do too, right? I've been listening to the calls and coming on the calls.
That hasn't grown as much as we'd like it to, but there is an international, focus, and we do have some people that are from other countries involved with us, and they do want to move this in their countries. We're struggling enough here, and that's got to kind of set its own self off. But yeah, there is some movement on international.
Right. Well, the reason why I brought it up was because I think that with this concept of filing a claim, right, out where you are representing a national body of people, right, it's a bit of a logical fallacy, and I'm only putting it that
way. We have not filed a claim for an international position.
Not a claim, but I didn't say international. Only to I said international. I'm going national.
I know. I made the mistake there. But we didn't file a claim. We're not filing claims.
Okay. You're going to file a lawsuit.
What we are doing is we are filing in. No, we're not filing a lawsuit either. Lawyers seem to think this. We're going to be much more clear in our next paper. Look, we knew we'd have to explain this, but before we can explain it, we had to do a lot of things. We had to get a lot of positions and papers into the courts. We also had to write a lot of memorandums, which are the building blocks of our positions that we're going to eventually bring together and make the point on who and what we really are, because they clearly don't understand this. Listen. The grand jury comes up out of the people. The first grand jury, you know, ultimately that we know comes out, we see from the Magna Carta, the 25. Mm-hmm. And we've looked into the language of the Magna Carta. We use some of the language, you know, the securities of the peace. That's who we are. And if people are being abused and beat up, then the 25 is going to go and fix those people. Well, they won't let the 25 fix the people. We have been filing papers in courts. We did start off filing some judgments.
Information.
Not judgments. Well, we filed a lot of information. We've been doing a lot of that, okay? But we did do some indictments early on. And we realized that they're not going to go nowhere. They didn't go anywhere on the state level. On the federal level, we have not filed one indictment yet because it's not time to file an indictment. We have to wait for that time. And hopefully, you know, by God's mercy, we'll have the wisdom to see when that time is. But with that said and done, we have filed informations. We have filed all kinds of papers. But we have, and a lot of the information talks about subversion by enemies, both foreign and domestic, within our country, within our elected system itself, on the federal level, the state level, the county, every level. Okay, we have tyrants all over the place. And everything we've done was done properly. You know, we're not necessarily educated, but we're not that uneducated that we don't write where people can't understand what we're talking about. And we do stay with the Constitution and the founding documents and the founding fathers and good Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court rulings and things of that nature. But again, it's just ignored and been ignored. Okay, so we said, okay, so we'll keep filing the papers, let them ignore it, because that's proof of the fact that they're ignoring the people. It's proof of the fact that they're removing papers from the courts. It's proof of the fact that we're filing this information concerning subversion, and they're doing nothing with it. They're hiding it. They're burying it, whatever they want to do. Now we move into other cases, and we start to build these cases and see these cases of people, with these foreclosures, by doing the habeas corpuses, by the cases that are going on out west, and all of these different cases. We have also the tax foreclosure cases. And there are other things coming up that we're going to be bringing in. We've probably got about 60 cases. But you see, well, we said, well, okay, let's bring them into one court. We got to file them someplace that's official, so we had to go open a court case. And we're saying this is going to be an Article III court. This is going to be one that's going to be, you know, a court following by the rules of the common law, and it's going to be a court of record, a trial by jury. But first, we'll take all of these cases that we've been working on and filing, and all of these cases that have been removed. You know, we have filed a lot of habeas corpuses into a lot of different court cases, and we've seen some of them emerge, on the docket and then disappear, okay, taken off. A lot of them don't even make it to the docket, and they just totally ignore it. Well, we've laid out the process, and it was done correctly or properly, and they ignored it. Again, we have all of these cases. So now what are we going to do? We're going to do show causes, okay? We're in here with a court case that actually is going to become criminal cases ultimately, because that's what they are. They're all criminals. And so we're going to turn these things over to a prosecutor. Hopefully we're going to be able to get the Attorney General to work with us. After all, he says he's here. He's going to enforce the law. President says he's going to enforce the law. A president says this U.S. Supreme Court judge, the new one that he put on, he's going to enforce the law. We're going to hold him to his words. And you see, that may be where our leverage is at, because I do believe that this president does understand our paperwork, and I think the reason he understands our paperwork is because he's not a bar tort lawyer. But a lot of these other lawyers, you know, people can't make these decisions. You know, what did Jefferson say? You know, if the people are incapable of taking care of their business, then teach them to take care of the business. I forget exactly how his words was, educate them. And but they have no intentions on educating us. They want to keep us ignorant and dumb because if we don't know how the court system works and we can't get in to do anything about it, then they can keep themselves protected and keep breaking the law and get away with all this stuff because they control it. Okay, but the bottom line is that I think the president's going to easily understand our paperwork. I think he does. The question is the attorney general going to understand, or is his thinking that he has been, you know, really drilled into his mind and thinking of all these years as a lawyer and maybe as a prosecutor and that was the attorney general, is all that going to be reject what we have? And what do we have? We have founding fathers' documents. We have the founding documents. We have the founding fathers' words. We have the U.S. Supreme Court. And yet it seems that these people that are bar taught, they just can't digest this for some reason, you know? There's one court case we had.
Let me interject for a second, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
About this thing you brought up about the jury's authority to not only inform but indict. Okay. But I think that the whole I think they were supposed to inform themselves, right? Because I was reading some dialogue from 1200s, some of the roles from the IRS system. And I was looking through what the judge was saying. And at one point he was asking the 12, you know, what did they have? You know, he didn't even know the facts of it, you know? And they basically found the guy innocent of whatever they accused him of. He didn't have any rights because he was accused of, I guess, something that had something to do with the state. But yeah, so the whole idea is that I think it's going to come down to that local level, because in it, the gentleman who was being accused actually rejected the first, because he successfully rejected the judge's application of 12 jurors that were not his peers, you see? And that's what actually allowed him to get a real acquittal, if you will. So there are some areas I believe that this is going to work, but it has to be very strategic, strategically applied.
Yeah,
I'm
not too sure what you're really saying here, but let's go back down to the basics.
Well, first of all, we're not going in as a plaintiff. That's the difference. We're not running these cases. We're coming in as.
But how do you do that though, John? How can you represent all of the people?
How we do that, because when we go, because people have brought us their cases with affidavits, and we have looked at them. The 25 have looked at them, although it's more than 25. It's the whole. It's from every state in the United States. We're going into the highest court, and we're saying, "Look, here's the abuses that we've investigated. Each case is its own plaintiff." They have to go into each case and open it up and get a jury for each case.
We're just the sureties of the peace of this. Remember what the government does. Remember what the prosecutor does. He says, we the people versus Joe Schmo in this criminal case. And they're using our name.
But it's usually the people of a state, though. It's the people of a state.
Look at,
in court, not of record.
Look, there's no such thing as only local issues today. Everything goes all the way to the top because there's consolidated power. Look, the sheriffs are being controlled by the marshals because there's federal money going into the sheriffs. Now, anytime we find corruption, we find a direct line, sometimes right to the White House. How could you say that the grand jury can only adjudicate on local issues when everything is national? It goes up to the top.
Well, I'm not saying that specifically. I hear what you're making a very good argument, actually. You are making a good argument for one thing specifically, and that is the ability of a group of qualified persons to address federal issues.
Again, you don't have to be that educated. I mean, look, you just have to understand the principles. But here's the key. When you go to a court case, for instance, let's take the Bundy case or the Wildlife Preserve case, and they spent a year going back and forth, going through witnesses, and then, you know, having all these hearings, and then the judge making a ruling, all these rulings. Well, we're not going to have these witnesses coming in. A month goes by, we're not going to have these witnesses. And before you know, they whittle all the witnesses away. They have nothing. And they can't even bring up, they can't even read the Constitution in the courtroom. Okay.
Exactly.
I mean, this is, now you're talking, now what is the jury going to hear? They're going to hear nothing but the other side.
I think it has to do with the amendment. Sorry, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, fortunately for these people, they took this so overboard. Fortunately for these people who are facing all this time in prison on the wildlife preserve situation there, okay, and then some of them still are, okay, but a lot of them got off, and the jury acquitted them, and the reason why is because they saw what the judge, they were so overboard and so overwhelming. They saw what was going on, and then they planted an FBI agent as one of the jurists. Okay, that was in the thing. He was a paid informant. Okay, so there, and they discovered him inside there. Okay, they knew the whole thing was rotten from the core. So you know, the truth did bleed through there. But how many cases? I could tell you the people that have brought cases to us where people are 10, 20, 15 years in jail right now as we speak, and they had plenty of witnesses. But again, they go through a year of meetings, and they have this hearing and that hearing, and by the time they get up to the case, they didn't have one witness for their case on their side, not one. This is disgusting. And this is what's going on in the courts right now. And so really they're tainting the juries. They're also telling the juries that they don't have the power of, you know, to nullify. They're telling the juries that they don't get to decide what the law is. That the judge will explain the law to them. Look at it. At the end of the day, they can constantly get their conviction almost all the time. And the grand jury is the same thing. I mean, they're just also tainted. And if you go look at the questionnaires before for them to choose the juries, I mean, it'll blow your mind. I mean, we've got a copy of it up on our site. I mean, it does nothing but taint them, put them into categories and positions, so they know exactly what's in the mind of the people. They pick the right people for the right jury for the right trial, and they know who not to ever let in their courtrooms. You know,
Don't forget who gave them their judicial immunity themselves.
Okay.
They proclaimed it themselves.
Yeah.
What they did is they amended the federal rules of criminal procedure to allow to take away the power of the grand jury. You know what I'm saying? In other words, I'm just trying to put it simply.
I'm just saying that judges believe they have this immunity, that they proclaimed it themselves. It's nowhere in the Constitution. It's nowhere in the rule book.
What they're doing is they're going under the federal rules of criminal procedure. Instead of
I don't know if that's true.
At the federal level, yeah.
No,
it's true.
Level,
they did an amendment.
I don't know if that's,
yeah,
I'm trying to recall someplace where it gives them some kind of ability to not be held accountable on the rules. I don't see it there. But let me
look real quick while you're dialoguing. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have seen court cases where these judges come out and make these silly rulings, but they're under all federal districts and even state-level courts and so on and so forth. The United States Supreme Court has never come up with a ruling like that I'm aware of. Okay, and clearly no man is above the law. If you're going to break the law, okay. Once you move away from the law, and start to become what's called bad behavior. In other words, you're not applying the Constitution. Now you're subject to the law itself. You can't hide from that. As long as they don't come out of their jurisdiction, and as long as they don't deny due process, they should be pretty safe. If you don't deny due process, you stay within the jurisdiction, that judge is very safe.
Well, you're right about that. And one thing about it, the judge likes to do is basically take away the power, you know, from the jury to get a decision contrary to his agenda or whatever it is that he's trying to do as far as his money.
He's being told how that case has got to go by powers that be that are controlling the whole process. Certain people just are not going to go to jail. Certain people they want in jail. And it's all about, ultimately it's all about subversion. That's what it's all about.
In the case of Levy versus Wilson, 1886, the grand jury was referred to as the follows. I'm reading now. One of the grounds stated in the petition, I'm reading the quote, is that the indictment was found by a body of men styled a grand jury that was not in law and fact a valid and constitutional grand jury. If that be so, the accusatory paper returned by them to the court below as an indictment is worthless and void. So
well,
I guess that's from people.
What's a constitutional grand jury? I'd like to know what that is.
That's a good question. What is that? What do you think it is?
Yeah, first of all, I think everything that they said there is hogwash. It's meaningless. It means nothing to me. I couldn't care less. You know, the bottom line is the grand jury comes out from the people. Okay, that's the bottom line. And we have learned of watching the courts over the past couple of hundred years, we have learned and seen that you can't allow elected or appointed individuals control a jury. They can have no supervisory control over a jury, nor should they have any connection with that jury. They shouldn't speak to that jury. Okay, the prosecutor can bring in their case before the grand jury, but bear in mind, the prosecutor usually calls together the grand jury and probably has a lot to do with the choosing of the individuals of that grand jury. In other words, let's bring these group of people in. Yeah, bring these group of people. These, because they know they're going to get the conviction. Why? Because they've already done, you know, they put their questionnaire out. They've done their psychologicals on them. They know how these people are going to lean or who's easily to control and so on and so forth. They know a lot about their psychological makeup on it. Look, it's all tainting, every bit of it. You cannot allow the fox to control, take control of the hen house. You just can't do it. The people have got to take control themselves. And the original grand jury was the people. They didn't go and get an authority. They didn't go figure things out in any courtroom. They didn't go talk to a judge. They didn't talk to elected people. They got up and they took care of business. And they said, this is the way it's going to be because we're free men. Okay, and the whole process was set up for free men, and it was stolen from them practically from the beginning, it seems. Okay.
Well, this is why they've been keeping us, John, in a state of emergency, because under the Fifth Amendment, and this is the constitutional grand jury reference that I was saying a second ago, was right here, that under the Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime, right, unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except, check this out, this is where they're getting us with the state of emergency, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same. See what I'm saying? What they're doing is they're using the Constitution against the people. It's a trick.
It's all null and void anyway.
Could be.
It's a freaking trick, man. You see that?
Yeah,
but it's all null and void.
That makes them feel better.
Yeah, but again, once you lay the fraud out and make it clear where they can't make an argument, the only thing they could try to do is kick you out of court. But if you create an environment and a situation, as we hope that we're doing, where they're going to not be unable to just throw us out of the courtroom, they're going to have to deal with us somehow, something's got to break somewhere.
But
you know?
I'm going to close with this. Listen, John, I've called DHS directly. I've called my city police department directly and asked them, are we in a state of emergency? Is there something, are we at peacetime or wartime? Because the police department has a patch, and on the patch it says Oro en Paz, Fierro en Guerra, which is Spanish for golden peace, iron in war. And I asked them, which time is it? Is it peacetime or wartime? And no one wants to answer, and no one can answer, because that would jeopardize their entire agenda. And this is Jeremiah from Northern California. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, the people you spoke to, though, may not even understand themselves what you're even asking them. I don't know. You know, all of that. Again, I try to keep it simple. There's way too much stuff going on.
I've spoken to sheriffs.
And we can't get too lost in all this stuff. Let's get down to the basics. Let's get due process in the courts. Okay, let's get the proper jurisdiction going, and let's get rights. Let's get people's rights under you know, being held.
I want you to have my direct number.
Get those three things going. We're going to kick butt. Just let's get the foundation, the basics in.
I'm going to email
everything else is going to take care of itself. because you're going to have people coming up and taking and coming into the courts on as grand jurists and as trial jurists, okay, and becoming educated and coming into the system all over the place with all kinds of ideas, and they're going to see the evil, and there's just going to, people are going to be going to jail all over the place. And if we get into the courts, and it's not that we what we want to do, but I think it's what's going to, it's just going to naturally happen. Because
I think the best route,
to be criminals.
The best route, though, is when you have a direct, in other words, you can do it under National Liberty Alliance, okay, as long as you're the backbone for the local action. You see what I'm saying? You're just there as the overseers, but you have NLA on the ground, on the local level, as the grand jury doing the information. You see? I think that's fantastic. Keep going with that. Good job.
We're really getting it down to the grassroots, because the people on the grassroots got to pick it up, and if they don't, then it's not going to go nowhere.
That's why I want you to keep in touch with me.
We do have to spearhead into the courts and get that opening going and get the beginning going. Once we get the beginning going, now it's up to the people. But then it gets back to the people taking their oath and maintaining their oath, honor, justice, and mercy. You know, we can't be going out on some kind of rampage.
But you're opening up a can of worms right now.
But unfortunately, a lot of people are going to go to jail.
Well, but John, I was going to close, but listen, the oath is a debatable, you said it earlier, it's debatable whether the judge should follow it or not sometimes, right? Because should a judge follow an oath on a faulty law?
Let me restate that, because I misquote if I said the word oath. I meant vow, a vow to God. We ask the people that are becoming the administrators to take a vow to God. It's between them and their maker, okay, that they're going to go and do the right thing by having
a violation of the Constitution.
Justice,
Article 6.
Okay, but listen,
Article 6, Section 3, no religious test.
Honor, there is no religion here. Coming in with honor, justice, and mercy. Okay? Now, religious tests, forget about that when it comes to the maker, because it has nothing to do with religion. It's just a fact that this is a creation, that there is a God. You know, one may be this religion, one may be that religion, or that sect, or this sect. Look, that's where you don't want to get lost in. And if people don't want to believe in God, that's their business too. You know, you can't do nothing about that. But the bottom line,
I love you guys. That's cool.
The bottom line, though, is that there is a creator, and there is natural law, and wow. God did write the laws, his laws in the hearts of men. There are certain things you can't keep. Thou shalt not kill, and thou shalt not steal. Love thy God, love thy neighbor. You know, those are all the basics. I mean, who can argue any of those? You know?
Well, that's what we were founded on, so we can't get away from our founding principles. If you don't like our founding principles, then go to some other country.
Well,
so
participate in the best way you can. And,
right.
In
other words, we're not forcing a religion, but we're not going to change our founding principles.
People need to go to their maker or the force of the universe, whatever they think it is. It's their business what they think it is, but they have to take that vow to, even if it's to themselves. I'm going to be honorable, I'm going to be just, and I'm always going to consider mercy at the end of the day. Those are the three things that will control and keep the people on straight line, okay? And if we hold each other to that, each county has four administrators, some more, but basically speaking, four administrators, if we hold each other to those standards, we'll never go wrong.
Well, I like the jury standard, and that's a very, very solid way of telling the truth and actually getting the truth and getting the truth to come out in fact. So I think that's the solution. So I bid you farewell, and we'll talk to you in the next time. That was really cool, man. Thanks for the call.
Gerard, are you muted?
Hello.
We're not
I muted Eric, myself and unmuted Eric. Go ahead, Eric. Eric, you're on. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, all right. Thanks. I had a question. It was, now I have several, but I'll just stick with the one. In a recent interview with Fox News Channel's Martha McCollum, President Trump said the following, I've always been a closer. We don't have a lot of closers in politics, and I understand why. It's a very rough system. It's an archaic system. You look at the rules of the Senate and even the rules of the House, but the rules of the Senate and some of the things you have to go through, it's really a bad thing for the country, in my opinion. They're archaic rules. He goes on to say, maybe at some point we're going to have to take those rules on because for the good of the nation, things are going to have to be different because you can't go through a process like this. It's not fair. It forces you to make bad decisions. You're forced into doing things you'd normally not do except for these archaic rules. And so my question is, if Trump doesn't understand the Constitution, and I don't think he does understand the Constitution because if he did, he wouldn't allow a federal district judge to thwart his executive decisions. But if he doesn't understand the Constitution, the idea of him saying,
yeah,
hey, we're going to have
to... I think he got lost on bad advice. We gave him some advice, but our advice came late. But maybe next time he'll take our advice over the advice that he took off these, you know, whatever attorney he's got giving him. And he's got people giving him advice, all kinds of advisors. But, you know, when it comes to these committees, we understand exactly the problem. We saw this problem in the committee man process. And basically there is a structure that has been set out that have created a set of rules that takes control of the body, okay, the committee. And that is done on the committee men, and that's how they control all the committees throughout the whole United States. All the committee men that think that they have something to say and that they, you know, they're really doing a good job, most of them understand it. Maybe a year or two or so many years down the line, you know, they start to realize that I'm being used, I've been had, and they leave. So there's a big attrition there. They're constantly losing committee men and bringing new ones in. And the ones that stay are the ones that got the deals going on. There's money involved. There's prestige involved. There's position involved. There's favors involved. There's all kinds of things. And, you know, the hearts of men are desperately wicked. So a lot of those people are drawn into that. They get captured by that. And they're playing and working the system. The whole system comes corrupt. Now, if the committee... If the chairman of the committee or whoever's leading the committee doesn't want to bring an issue up, they keep it out. I mean, who came up with that idea? You know, we reset all of the rules here in New York State when we got the only elected committee men in New York State. There was about 30 of us between mostly Republicans and a few Democrats. And we rewrote the rules together, Republicans and Democrats together. And when we bring this committee man process back, we're going to bring those rules into play because they're valid, because we were the only elected committee men in New York State probably in 60 years, okay? Now, a lot of states think that they've elected their committee men, and they haven't, especially the what? Well, we won't get into those details, but the same rule system that they've got working in the committee man process is also working, I believe, in the House, okay, in both houses. They break these people up into committees, and then they have power to a few, because a couple of people who decide what's going to go on the floor and what's not going to go on the floor, and people get angry. There was this one YouTube out there, and I don't know what state he was in. Yeah, I don't know what state he was in. But he got so angry, and he threw the books at him. And everybody else, you know, they just went on with business as usual, like they didn't even hear the complaint of the fact that they're being, you know, controlled by a couple of tyrants in the whole process. Okay, and this is in every single legislature, legislative, you know, in the states, all the state legislators, and obviously in the federal system also. This has got to be broken down. Look, you elect the chairman by popular vote, period, okay? And at any given time, when you don't like the chairman, what's going on, you could take a popular vote and get rid of them. You got to keep things moving. Most of what they're discussing and get involved in, they shouldn't be discussing and they shouldn't be involved in anyway because they don't have the constitutional authority to even think and make these decisions that they're doing. Most of what Congress comes up with is just unconstitutional. They don't have the jurisdiction to make these laws or these statutes. They're called lawmakers, but they're statute makers, and there's a difference. Statutes are things created by men, ultimately. But, you know, again, the whole system is created to control it, and that's what Trump is seeing. And
that guy was talking about, he didn't even get a chance to read the bill or to comment on it, and they wanted to vote on it. It was disgusting.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That was a simple. That's a simple vote. The simple vote is no. Then.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
But before he's going to, I mean, before talking about changing it, I mean, if it worked cleanly, he would see that it's a superb system. It's the best system ever contrived by the mind of man. But he doesn't get to
What's
see
that?
This. So what you're saying,
is that?
The Constitution.
Oh, yeah, but the Congress, the way Congress is run, okay, their rules and the way what comes out onto the floor and what doesn't come out on the floor and who makes those decisions, those people have been in control forever. And when one comes out, they get the next guy in. They constantly maintain control on this whole system. And so Congress can really never get anything really done that's right. You know, anything that's good, they're just not going to get done. But again,
right.
You know, if we can stop them from going doing unconstitutional things, that's all we can do, and that's all we need to do. We also need to take away all the money and all this stuff that's involved in politics, and that'll get rid of a lot of the criminals also. And if we start indicting these people who are starting to do all these evil things, again, that'll start to get rid of a lot of them, and hopefully they'll be able to create a better rule system for themselves. You know, I don't know how that's going. I know how it could be done and how it can be done, and hopefully if we get the court systems back and we free the committee man process, I know how we could do it on the committee man process. Again, we've already done it in New York, and it could be done anywhere. People just need to understand, and especially people who aren't politicians. Remember, committee men are volunteers. Usually you're brought into the system because you're trying to do something good for your community. You know, somebody, you know, usually one person say you think about becoming a committee man because they're out, you know, bringing people in. And people come in for good reasons. And then they get pretty disgusted after a couple of years, and they just want out. But again, some of them learn to work the deal and benefit themselves from the process. It's all politics. And they say to themselves and to each other, it's all politics, so it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. It's politics. Yeah? No, it's evil.
Right. It's pure evil. Right. And a mammon worshiper would call graft and usury. They call it good business. Right. I understand. And your point is made. You're right about the committee man. And you know, I learned that. I've learned it from you and reading the stuff and listening to the stuff you've done and you've written about it. You know, it's a bit alarming to hear him say these things when if he understood
right.
what... Yeah, no,
he's
I
right.
understand that
Committees
he's,
are
he's right about... Yeah, I appreciate that that's the mess, but my fear is that he'll want to change the Constitution. You see what I'm saying? That's what I believe it's going to be.
I don't think so. I think he's like a lot of us, and he's starting to look into these things for the first time. And you know, he's his own man. You know that. I mean, the oligarchy hasn't even approached him yet. That's my opinion. I mean, this guy's just free. He's just acting free as you can be and doing everything that we, the people, want done. I mean, it's amazing what this guy has done and what he's doing and what he's saying. Okay? So, you know, take that at one point. Now, I think he's going to – look, at you know, it's hit and miss. You know, it's you do something and it doesn't work out well and you learn from it. You know, you learn from your mistakes. You start making corrections because he doesn't build on error. He wouldn't be the man he is today if he was. If he continued to make error and build on error, he'd never be as successful as he is. And even here in the political world that he's involved with now, he's going to make some error, but he's going to make his corrections and he's going to move on and he's going to do better next time. Do any of us agree with each other all the time anyway? That doesn't happen. So it's okay if he makes a mistake, and it's okay if his misjudgment is put out there, and as time goes on, hopefully it'll get fixed. But we all have to grow.
The other problem with him, you can never second guess him because you don't know what he's throwing out there for effect. In other words, he may be putting something out there to make them nervous or to get them talking or to move them in a certain way. Just like when they went after his travel ban, and he didn't tell them, I don't have to listen to you. He left the case in there for them to chew on, and he reworded it and put another one in that they didn't have enough time to go through the courts to stop it. So he played them, And they're still playing with the original one, which they have no authority. And I think he did it purposely to keep them tied up. Just like what he's saying, right. I think we need to change these rules. He might have thrown that out there to get them all thinking about the rules that they're working on to distract them from something else. You never know with him where he's going. He doesn't explain himself real good. It drives me crazy because you don't really know where his head's at. You know, and sometimes you think he's totally off base, and then you find out. Then he turns around. I mean, he's had some people there. I was like, what's he doing with that guy here? That guy's the devil. And then you turn around 6 weeks later, and he's firing him. So I really
in the house of the devil, though, you know?
I understand that, and I have a hard time second-guessing him all the time because I never know what the heck he's doing. And I think we don't give him enough. You know, he's got a lot of strategies. He's got a lot of noise in his head right now. But, you know, by him saying he needs the archaic rules, if he's not talking about the Constitution and he's talking about the House and the Senate and the crap that they've been playing with for years and subverting it, he's absolutely right. And
did
even if he has no
intention
of doing anything, he's making them nervous, if you know what I mean.
Did you hear his in power speech?
Well, no. This thing that I read came from just a few days ago, and it had to deal with 100 days. But no, I will go and listen to that.
Yeah, you got to listen, Gerard. Did you hear it?
No, I didn't. I did not.
No, it's on our news page. Front, go to our news. Click
I haven't
on
had
news,
a
come,
chance,
come,
but I will.
Highlight news, click on news. Well, let me see. I think it's Trump in the news. Yeah. Highlight news, click on Trump in the news, and it's the first, right now it's the first video. Tomorrow it'll probably go down, but it says President Trump's first 100 days. Look at that tells you who this guy really is. I'll tell you, all his speeches are very powerful, in my opinion, and he always comes up with some really good meat, you know? But this one here, he really was a constant. Constant, and the end of this thing was really great.
I will listen to it, and I hope what Gerard says is true. I hope he is putting on a show. I hope he is distracting them. Well, I did want to make the note that I think Jeremiah misquoted you. You weren't saying that a judge should not follow his oath. I think Brent might have even said it. It had to do with the fact that if you have an oath that breaks the law, once you realize it, then you must not obey it. You must go against it because you realize that it's breaking the law. I guess I'm just a little – I will go into the speech, but I'm a little ill at ease from some of the things I've heard from Trump. And, you know, if he is putting on a show, how much longer will he have to put on this show before –
Well,
you know,
just think about
he's
up against. Just think about who he's up against, you know? And you know, he can only move so fast. And he's got to do certain things, you know, in certain prerequisitional, you know, some things have to be done before other things, at least from his own logic. I know from my logic, I think I got to do this or do that or do the other thing before I could do this. And so I think there's a lot of that going on. I don't know. Whenever I hear his speeches, I'm elated. I'm impressed. Always, constantly.
Well,
this one,
I'll tell you what, the thing that gives me pause to reflect is his son-in-law there with the whole Jewish thing going on, and he's taking on a whole bunch of stuff for a guy that comes out of nowhere. That's what I wonder about, what's going on with him and Israel and that, you know what I mean, as far as our national foreign policy and our military.
I think he's doing people-to-people thing, though. Look at
we have to support
Israel.
Yeah.
Maybe not the powers that control Israel, but we have to support Israel. But we also have to support a lot of the Arab countries, too. I mean, look at it. If they're willing to work with us, we need to work with them. After all, we've been causing all kinds of havoc over there. And it isn't us, we the people. It's all these tyrants.
Bears watching.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Look, it's peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none. You know, and Brent, I don't know where if Brent said it here or on the Bible study, but Brent says, you know, in God's eyes, every parcel of land is just as precious as any other, and it's what the evil empire does is get us to do their dirty work. I appreciate supporting Israel, but we shouldn't be doing their dirty work. You see what
Absolutely
I'm saying?
Not. Yeah, we shouldn't get entangled, involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so many of our top politicians have conflicts of interest with Israel. They really, really do. And they're getting billions of dollars from us.
The problem with sin or evil doing is it gets messier and messier. And the more and more you try to fix it, but you're always trying to benefit from it or whatever it is, you're just involved in this sin or this evil doing. And then it gets to the point, well, now you try to fix it. And how do you fix it? Look at all the problems we started in the Middle East. We've been for 50 years just destroying that whole area of the world. Now, how are we going to fix that? We can't fix that. How are we? How can we possibly fix all the damage that we've done out there? You know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, you know, this is a huge problem, but you have to support the people. You see, the people of those nations have been just as abused as we have been. Okay, and so we have to go after the evil in the nations, but ultimately we have to support the people. We have to deny the evil actions, but support the people. And how do you do that? I think Trump is trying to do that. That's what I think.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And it's like you say that the debt really isn't ours. And these unjust things that have happened to these people, well, we the people aren't doing it to them. It's you know, and like you say with the prosecutors, they're saying it's the people versus, and they're not the people. They're the state. They don't represent us. They never have.
Yeah, as far as the money, they can go chase the two private corporations, the IRS and the Federal Reserve. They're the ones that done all the evil. Go after them.
Absolutely. Well, one last thing about Trump here. I don't know if you saw this, but it was from the Zero Hedge. And he says, Trump flips on 5 core campaign promises in under 24 hours. Blink and you miss Trump's transformation into a mainstream politician. Now, I don't know.
Trump
Trump
flips what?
He flips on 5 core campaign promises, and these are the 5 in particular. Goodbye strong dollar and high interest rates.
Well, that's going to take
Trump
time.
The Wall Street.
In 100 days, what can a man do in 100 days? But look what he's done to the markets. The markets are rallying and going crazy. I mean, you know, business is getting excited. Things are happening in the business world. And I think after a couple of years, I think that that's going to be fulfilled. What did any of these other clowns do before him in the first 100 days? They didn't they didn't do anything what he's done. But what's the second one?
Okay, yeah. I'm with you 100%. I agree. Yeah. Gerard said, you know, it's good versus evil. If Hillary was in there, the first 100 days we'd be destroyed. Look, okay, yeah, so the second one is the second one is labeling China a currency manipulator. The third is Yellen's future, okay? The fourth is export-import bank, and the fifth is NATO, okay? And he says it's no longer obsolete.
China a what?
A currency manipulator. Apparently he said in his campaign that Trump was China was a currency manipulator.
Well, that may be a fact, but you're not gonna become the president and make friends by going to tell, hey, China, by the way, you're a currency manipulator. I mean, as a matter of fact, he covers something similar to that in his speech, concerning, I had something to do with China. But look at you can't attack China if you want China to help you, you know, and you got to make friends.
I'm with you.
I'll bet you there are a few campaign promises that he made that he probably may or will decide to go a different direction, because after all, we all grow and change our thinking and realize, well, you know, if we were wrong, why are we going to continue to build upon that wrong? We got to let it go.
Absolutely.
You know? So I'm sure there's something that he was wrong on, and be his perception or whatever, and he's going to have to let it go. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just admit to that and move on.
Well, look, China to raise the value of their dollar, and they're holding it down, which is making the deficit bigger. And that was a definite problem. Of course, now he's had talks with these guys. Look, we screwed China so bad. You know, when he got over there and the president said, look, you did this, and that, he might have had a change of heart as far as what we owe them, because what we did to them was enough to make World War III. They should have bombed us for giving them all that bad debt that we sold them.
That's a good
packing up all those
Well, also, we've built up China to what they are today anyway. Also, I mean, there's another side of that coin.
Yeah,
you know, China,
I mean,
you know, what'd they do? They made little umbrellas on toothpicks or something, you know?
Well, one of the reasons China doesn't want to hurt us is because they got so much invested over here and so much of their money. It's like poking the finger in their own eye. So there is a benefit somewhat, you know what I mean? So I don't know what kind of deals they're getting into or whatever or what the discussions are, but things will change as China changes and Russia changes and we start working together. We're going to have to come up with some radical new things to save this economy, because like it or not, it is a global economy. Look, we're all doing business. The world is smaller. We got instant communications. We're buying things on eBay that are coming out of China. We got to figure it out. You know what I mean? We got to figure it out. So.
All right. Well, let me just say that you know, I see what you're saying. Those are all excellent points. But we got to get through to Trump enough for him to, if he's really going to transfer the power back to we the people, the NLA plan is the only one that's going to work. And I hope that he is listening. I hope that what you've heard is true and that he truly is listening, that he understands this, because if we don't take it back, then it's going to be all for naught.
Right. Well, look, a lot of good things are coming out, and I think things are getting better in a lot of different ways. I think Trump is participating with a lot of that, and I think we'll have some effect also.
It's hard to get the power back when they don't want us to have it in the first place, so it's kind of hard to give it back when they're controlling everything, and that's what it's about. They like John said, they think we're too stupid, too ignorant, and we they know better how to spend our money. And look at where they've gone.
Oh, absolutely.
And they don't want to give that power. They're not going to go down without a fight. That's the problem. Well, look, as the more people that are awake, the easier that fight becomes. But, you know, if enough people aren't awake to support it, it's not going to happen. You know, he needs that critical amount. You know, it's top down, bottom up, I keep saying. You know, I hate to bother, borrow that Van Jones's thing, but it works for us too. You know, if the
it
people get off our butts and raise and bring the bottom up, he's bringing the top down to us in a certain extent, and so we have to rise up and take it. You know, we got to bring the bottom up to beat the top that's coming down. So again, we should run for those committee men slots once we get the corruption out. It'll actually be worth doing again. You know.
Yeah.
But, of course, if
we
fix the committee man system and nobody gets out and runs for committee man, you'll end up with a click doing it again, and you'll just revert back to the same crap we just come out of, you know?
Yeah. All right, well, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, by the way, I just want to make a note that the video I put up on the first 100 days on the news is the wrong one. I'm going to put it up right now, though, on that page. But go ahead, Rod.
Okay. Well, actually, we're like at end times. It's 12 o'clock, so we...
Oh, yeah.
But we got Ollie there. I want to bring Ollie in. I haven't talked to him in a couple of days. Maybe he's got... Ollie, go ahead.
I'm gonna try to make good use of my 49 seconds. I'm gonna provide you a URL.
You've been reduced to 19 seconds.
www.ibanet.org. That's ibanet.org/conferences/Washington2016.aspx. Okay, now. The State Bar Associations is a member of the United States Bar Association, which in turn is a member of the International Bar Association. If you make it to this site, you see that the IBA has annual conferences. The last conference was in Washington, D.C. You'll also see that U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch gave the keynote address at the IBA conference. I want to know why the U.S. Attorney General is addressing the International Bar Association, and I would like to know what is the purpose of the International Bar Association, and maybe Brent could give a discussion on that next week.
Yeah, just like what's the purpose of the International Judges Association?
The International Association of Judges, maybe you can touch on that too.
Right, probably the same purpose. Well, thank you, Ollie. That's interesting, and I would like to check that out.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, I think we're going to end it for the evening.
If you need that website address, I'll drop it in your Skype box.
Yeah, do that for me, because I'll have to go back and listen to it six times to get it. So
yeah. Okay.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks.
All right.
Yeah,
I'm going to say good night, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And we're not going to be able to close. Usually we start with a song and close with a song. I can't get any songs going through this browser here, so we're just going to close it up.
Sing us a song, John. Come on.
Well, that was your job. You know.
You know.
All right, anyway, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for coming.